My house back in March.
What is this?
I call the meeting to order. I declare a quorum present. Coffee and snacks are being provided this evening by Sudbury Destination Imagination, a community-based, school-friendly program that builds participants' creativity, problem-solving, and teamwork in enjoyable and meaningful ways. I'm pleased to announce that after long negotiations with the superintendent of LS, we have compromised and agreed that you can bring food into the auditorium. There are, with one caveat, probably not a good idea to bring chili in. The fabric on these row seats, they're concerned about discoloring them. So there are sandwiches and other things outside. Feel free to take those inside, but please be careful not to spill things, and perhaps it's best not to have coffee and chili. So with that, I'll ask you also to remember to please turn off your cell phones and remind you to please give your name and address for the record anytime you wish to speak. If you desire to be recognized, just raise your hand from your seat. Do not stand at the microphone. After you're recognized, as soon as I recognize you, please stand up. That will enable the Boy Scouts to see you and bring you the microphone earlier rather than later. And when you receive the microphone from the Boy Scout, it will be on. You can begin speaking. There is a 3-second delay. So just keep speaking and you'll hear your voice on it. You don't have to flick the switch at all. A reminder that all motions must be delivered to me, the town clerk, and the folks at the Viewgraph in writing before the amendment is made. And a reminder that only registered voters can vote, and that if you're a non-resident, please sit in one of the two rows in the very back to my left or my right. Also, to remind presenters, please remember that voters have only seen the warrant. They haven't seen all the iterations of your motions that you've gone through that you're very familiar with. So I would appreciate it if you're not moving in the words of the article to explain to the hall how your motion is different than what appears in the warrant. Also, a reminder that there'll be no audible sounds, booing or clapping during or after someone is speaking, and no disrespectful comments to be made, whether directed at a speaker or a presenter or a town official. And also, I'd like to strongly encourage anybody who's in attendance tonight who doesn't usually speak at town meeting, please speak. We're interested in your opinion. I am now starting what I hope becomes a tradition in Sudbury tonight by continuing to expand our sense of community here at the annual town meeting. We can do this by again honoring one of our own, one who is particularly related to this august legislative body. Tonight, we are honoring Richard E. Thompson, known to one and all as Ed. Ed is here in the front row, and I'd appreciate if you could stand up. Ed is quietly unassuming, but a dedicated, consummate professional. Let me read to you some of Ed's accomplishments in Sudbury. He was the Industrial Accident Board agent for 22 years. He was the Mass Municipal Association legislative liaison for 7 years. He was the chief procurement officer for the town for 1 year. He was the Mass Bay Transportation Authority Committee member for 5 years. He was the acting town accountant, 1982, 1988 to 90. He was a negotiating advisory committee member for 2 years. He was the executive secretary of the town of Sudbury from 1972 to 1994. Before our town manager form of government, he was the CEO of Sudbury. He was also our interim town manager. He led the town in its transition to the town manager form of government. He, for the last 8 years, he has been the Sudbury Water District Treasurer. And also for the last 8 years, he has been the CEO of the Lincoln Sudbury Employees Credit Union. Ed, thank you for all you've done for Sudbury.
So much. I wasn't going to say anything, but I'd like to take this opportunity, Myron.
Bring the mic closer. Ed, bring the mic a little closer.
I'd like to take this opportunity, if I might. Sudbury has very wonderful people, and my recent illness and current illness, so many people have been so kind to me and thoughtful, and I'd just like to thank all of them. There's no way I can answer all the cards and calls and so forth. So I'd just like here to use this forum tonight to say thank you to those of you who are here tonight and those that might be on television. Thank you so much.
Ed. Ed, Paul Kenny, who served as your town council for so many years, has asked to say a few words.
Mr. Moderator, I'm sorry I can't rise because I was supposed to speak 3 inches away from the microphone, but the moderator is about to make a presentation to a fine, real, and distinguished gentleman, an adopted son of the town of Sudbury, of whom the town is very proud. And ladies and gentlemen, he is perhaps and probably the nicest man you'll ever meet.
Thank you, Paul. I'd also like to send our best wishes to Steve Meyer, who's battling colon cancer and is not well enough to attend town meeting tonight, but I'm sure he's watching us at home. Steve is an MIT professor who teaches, among other things, quantitative analysis at MIT. He was a Soviet arms control advisor in the first Bush administration 15 years ago. Last year, he received the Massachusetts Division of Wildlife and Fisheries Frank Sargent Award for Conservation, and also last year received the MIT Smith Award for Undergraduate Education. Steve has been a member and at times chairman of the Hopbrook Pond Study Committee for the last 13 years. He was a member and chair of the Sudbury Conservation Commission from 1993 to 2002. He drafted the Sudbury Wetland Protection Bylaw, which was then used as a model by the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection for many other cities and towns. Our best wishes go out not only to Steve, but to his wife, Debbie Deneen, and his son, Seth. I've also been asked to announce that David Bentley passed away a few days ago. The funeral, the wake will be from 4 to 8 p.m. Tomorrow at Duckett's funeral home. The funeral will be at 10 a.m. at Duckett's on Thursday. The obituary should be in tomorrow's Metro West newspaper. Articles 12 through 28 were approved on the consent calendar. We'll now go to Article 29. Jim Kelly Our building inspector will make the motion and the presentation.
Move in the words of the article.
Let me see the second. It does. Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The building department continually reviews the fees that we charge to issue permits and do the inspections. The wiring permit fees have not been increased for 24 years. We thought it would be appropriate. The fees make give us the opportunity to pay the bills for the services that we administer, and the cost of issuing the permit fees. The permits have risen since 1982, and we'd like to increase the fee from $2 per hundred to $3 per hundred for obtaining a wiring permit. It's just been quite a few years, and I think it's the right thing to do, so I'd like to see this article pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Debbie Zirka, Finance Committee. Your mic was off, but she said that the Finance Committee,
Finance Committee recommends approval.
Selectman John Drabinski.
Yes, Mr. Moderator, the Board of Selectmen approved this. I guess, Ed, why didn't we do this when you were Executive Secretary? It took a long time, but anyhow, I definitely got it. Thanks.
Great. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 29? I see none. We're ready for a vote. All those in favor of Article 29 signify by raising your cards. All those opposed. It's nearly unanimous. Article 30 has been withdrawn from the warrant, so we'll move on to Article 31, which was on the consent calendar, and we'll now have a motion by the Planning Board. Lisa Eggleston.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Please.
I'm Lisa Eggleston, speaking on behalf of the Planning Board, the Conservation Commission, and the Board of Health, all of whom are jointly sponsoring this article. Article 31 amends the existing bylaw governing the installation of in-ground automatic irrigation systems. The original bylaw was enacted at the 2000 annual town meeting and came about as a result of significant increased demand for town water during the summer months, which was taxing the Sudbury Water District's ability to pump adequate water to serve both residential and public safety purposes. The bylaw, which prohibits connection of irrigation systems to the town water supply, instead requires the construction of installation of on-site wells. The new bylaw has worked well, with over 185 permits issued, corresponding to a reduction in overall demand during the peak period of 3% or greater, even with the growth the town has seen during this five-year period. While the bylaw has been successful, it has its limitations. The Board of Health, who administers the permit, has encountered instances where some flexibility in siting the wells is needed, particularly in the case of cluster subdivisions, where the development is concentrated on smaller lots. This article will give the Board of Health the discretion to install irrigation wells closer than 100 feet to a septic system. No other waivers, setback waivers will be allowed. Installing these wells closer to the septic systems will have no health or environmental impacts whatsoever. The wells drilled under this bylaw must be a minimum of 100 feet deep, and most are closer to 500 feet deep. Septic systems are generally less than 10 feet deep. Hence, there will be no interaction between the two systems. In addition, the irrigation systems have no connection to a drinking water supply. There are no spigots or other means of collecting the water. The well is hooked up only to the sprinkler heads. And the wells must still comply with Title V setbacks and be fully permitted. This article gives homeowners more flexibility in the management of their property, gives the Board of Health more flexibility in permitting the environmental systems on residential properties, will have no negative impact on public health, and will continue the positive impacts of conservation of our groundwater supply. We urge your approval.
Thank you. Debbie, you going to report for the Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
John Drabinski for the Board of Selectmen.
Yes, Mr. Moderator, the Board of Selectmen unanimously support this article.
Any discussion on Article 31? Yes, Mr. Coe.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Bob Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I was the one who held the article from the consent calendar. When I look at the bylaw as it now stands, and I think this was largely supported by the Planning Board presentation, there really isn't a lot wrong with the article, as the bylaw as it is. The idea that we have to make it easier to put in irrigation wells is based on the premise that irrigation wells are necessarily a fine thing for the town, and I don't think that's necessarily a proven fact. I think that you always have the possibility that you're going to deplete the underlying aquifer, and just in general, I don't like to see us softening a bylaw that affects development in a way that makes it easier for the developers without getting a quid pro quo. Now, one thing that the Planning Board, as I understand it, is trying to do is to encourage the use of cluster development and encourage the use of common irrigation wells, where you have, say, only one irrigation well in a cluster development, or one per certain number of units. And I think it would have been a fine thing if this article had given this break in the setback requirement only to wells on cluster developments and only those that were the only well on the development. I have no intention of proposing an amendment because I don't think that you can write a bylaw on the town meeting floor, but I really hope that the boards that are proposing this article will give this idea some thought, that when you want to make a change because you think that people are asking for it, then let's see what we can get in return for the benefit of the town. And in this case, I think we missed an opportunity to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Carr. I'm sure the Planning Board will take your comments under advisement. Are there any other? Yes, over there.
Mm-hmm. Ursula Alliance, 157 Wayside and Road. I'd like to follow up on Mr. Cole's comments, but mainly for two things. The supply is certainly, the demand is down, but I'd like to ask Mr. Drabinski, who is aware, as I believe, all the people on the Sudbury River Task Force are, that recent studies have shown that irrigation wells are actually depleting the supply of town water. So I'd like to ask Mr. Drabinski to comment on what he knows about that. And then secondly, the irrigation bylaw has several parts to it, and one of them is monitoring for E. coli bacteria. Another one is making sure integrated pest management is being used. And I'd like to know if there's any monitoring done. I know for a fact that people have told me they have wells and nobody has come to check their well. So if we're going backwards in this instead of forwards, I would urge defeating this article.
Mr. Drabinski?
Yes, the United States Geological Survey is currently in the process of looking at river flow throughout the Suwasco watershed basin, specifically the upper Sudbury, and the information is not in yet. I think my personal feeling is I'd rather have small individual irrigation wells which pump only a couple of gallons per minute than putting the entire stress on the municipal water system. If you remember 3 or 4 years back that we had a tremendous overuse of Sudbury District's water to water lawns and not for fire protection, drinking water, and sanitary purposes. And there were times that the tank in Goodman's Hill was drawn almost to the bottom. If we did have a large fire in town, that we would be in a catastrophic situation. So I think until the final USGS study comes out, that's up in the air, and we don't know, but we will look at that. But I think from an overall protection of public health and safety in the town, it's better to keep our water supplying drinking water, sanitary water, and fire suppression water, and let people draw individual individual gallons per minute from their property to water their lawn. I think that's a more prudent thing. And at the same time, when we pull water from the local aquifer from your front yard, even though there is some evaporation into the atmosphere, the water is getting locally recharged, where if we draw from the water district, it doesn't get locally recharged. So I think at the end of the day, until all the data comes in, it's a prudent way of really protecting the entire community. And as we go forward, we may have to amend it, but I think we're going in the right direction now to additional information. Can I ask you a question or something?
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 31? Yes, Ms. Lyons.
What?
Wait for a mic, please. Could you stand up, Ursula, so I can see you?
I had a second question. Who is responsible for doing the monitoring? I know it says Board of Health, but evidently they're not doing it.
Okay, we're going to ask Lisa Eggleston of the Planning Board, who's also an engineer, to respond to that.
I might admit, Myron, I'm not an engineer. Don't put me in that category.
Okay. In terms of monitoring, are you talking water quality monitoring?
Hang on a second.
Point.
Lisa asked the question through the chair. What are the other choices? Water quality, quantity?
Well, I guess I'm not clear. The point with the irrigation wells is that they are not connected to a potable water supply. They're not intended for drinking. There are no spigots on them that your kids are drinking out of and so forth. And they are not regulated by the state as a potable water supply. They are strictly for irrigation. It prevents us from wasting our treated water on the lawn, basically. They are regulated by the Board of Health. Bob Leupold, our health agent, goes out and inspects each one and issues the permit.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 31? Yes, sir. Right behind you is a mic.
My name is Bob Gottberg. I live at 89 Mossman Road. I just was wondering what kind of a permit fee are we charging to install the irrigation system? Because ultimately, although we're not saying it, it's being drawn from the same aquifer as our drinking water. And I feel we should have a fairly high permit fee for that.
At this time, there is no permit fee for this. Part of the issue with the irrigation wells, they are 100 to 500 feet deep. Most of the residential areas that are regulated under this are not within the Zone 2 of our town water supply. It really is not the same aquifer. We are not Cape Cod, where it's all sand and all connected. Thank you.
You want to say anything? No, I think she does.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 31? I see none. All those in favor of Article 31, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. We'll now go on to Article 32, which also was on the consent calendar, was being held. I recognize John Brackett, superintendent of the local schools, for a motion and then a presentation.
Move in the words of the article.
Does that receive a second? It does.
I'm John Brackett, superintendent. On behalf of the Sudbury Public Schools and the Public School Committee, Article 32 is a request to create an account for the collection and use of fees that would be associated with the use of school facilities by non-school groups. It is our current mission and core value in the school system to allow and encourage groups that are associated and organized in Sudbury and serving and providing a service to the citizens of Sudbury to use our facilities, and we want to continue to encourage that. But in some cases, that use occurs outside of the normal school day or the working day, and it requires additional staff to open the building and to monitor the use. Right now, we do levy fees to offset those costs. However, we have no mechanism short of an account, as we're requesting be formed tonight, to actually gather those fees and then ultimately turn around and pay the custodians or those that are supervising the facility. So that is done outside the direction of the school system, and we feel that in everyone's best interest, it is better to bring those bring that process in-house and provide some better controls over it and better consistency as it gets applied throughout the through across all users. We're not asking specifically to levy fees. That is a statutory right given to the school committee and actually already exists. So what we're asking this evening is that you approve the article which creates the account for collecting and then ultimately using those fees in support to offset the cost of that use. Thank you.
Thank you. Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee recommends approval.
Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen unanimously urges approval.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 32? Mr. Coe, right behind you.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I was the one who held this one, too. Based on Dr. Brackett's presentation, I gather that the way that things are done now is that the money that's charged for these events that are held in the school buildings comes back into the general fund of the town rather than being assigned to the schools. If that's the case, then if this is simply an accounting transaction to try to get a little better control of where the money is coming from and where it's going, then does this mean that the amount of money that that is allocated to the schools out of the annual budget will be decreased by that amount? Because that would be the way that would be revenue neutral in this case. If the school committee is going to charge the money directly and then keep the money, rather than having it come back to the town, then there must be an equivalent transfer of money in the town budget for the schools that will no longer be necessary in the future. Can someone clarify that for me?
Yes,
please?
Mr. Brackett for an answer.
Yes, currently the fees are paid directly to offset the cost of the custodian, and they're paid directly to the custodian. We have not been charging fees for some time for the use of the facility, so it has not gone to the town of Sudbury and into the general fund. There have not been fees associated with that. So what would happen in the case once the account would be created, we would collect the fees and then pay the custodians out of that fee. So while I'm not saying that there won't be charges for some organizations that maybe are not in direct support of the town that may actually go to help offset the cost of utilities, etc. The majority of the purpose of this is to then to offset the cost of our custodial time. Did I answer your question directly?
Sounds like you said yes.
That's a superintendent's way of saying yes.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, way in the back, on the left. Could you stand up, please? When I call on you, it would be easier on the Boy Scouts if you stood up as soon as I call on you, and then they can get the mic over to you.
Kerry Lynn, 164 Maynard Farm Road. I'm curious to know whether any groups that have traditionally been using the school, such as the Cub Scouts, will now be charged, whereas they weren't before, or whether this is will groups that have been using the school without charge be charged in the future going forward?
Thank you. He asked, would groups like the Cub Scouts be charged if they weren't charged before? Would they be charged now under this bylaw?
Oh, the answer is those school groups or those related directly to the school would not, if they are not being charged, it is not our intent to all of a sudden assess fees for groups like the Cub Scouts, certainly the PTOs and groups that are related. That is not the intent of certainly this article.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a good idea to charge the Boy Scouts because then they would charge us for delivering the warrant, right? Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 32? I see, yes, sir, in the middle.
Richard Williamson, 21 Pendleton Road. As a former Cub Scout leader for 5 years here in Sudbury, I would like to know what the situation is relative to Cub Scouts, because while I was a Cub Master, we actually had to move our meetings out of the schools because we could not afford the custodial fees.
Now you can move your meetings back in the schools because they're not going to charge you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 32? Yes, sir, in the middle. Stand up, please. And they're going to pass the mic to you.
Peter Henderson, 243 Morse Road. Dr. Brackett, as the treasurer of Sudbury Youth Basketball, a heavy user of your facilities in the winter, and a contributor back to the town, as I believe you're aware, we have our upcoming registration for next season will start July 1. Do we need to budget for a fee?
Yeah, does the Sudbury Youth Basketball, for their registration, have to budget some amount of money for using the facilities? Will they be charged? Anybody else?
My assumption is that you already budget a certain amount of money for the use of the facilities that you pay directly to a custodian. While we have not determined what the fee structure will be to offset the cost, there would be certainly a continuation of that. And so whatever you've been budgeting, we'll get that information as soon as a determination has been made, if that answers your question. So it would be a continuation of the same type of fees that are being associated.
Okay. Nothing new. No new additional fees. We have paid for the custodial use over many years.
Yes. I can't speak for the school committee because we're still talking about this and they're still working out the details of the fee structure and how this will be assessed. So I don't want to commit the school committee to a decision, but it is certainly not the intent of our fees to... because we know that in many cases it will just be passed back to the users. So we do not want to create a fee structure for groups that are serving our kids that is going to be onerous to the organization or to our families.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes. Way in the back. Could you stand up, please? Thank you.
Greg Bicicchio, 22 Pine Ridge Road. My question is regarding the net pay to the custodians. If custodians are being paid directly now, are they in essence being paid 100% or no taxes taken out? If it goes through the town, are they going to view it as a net pay decrease? And will the town be looking to increase the fees to net out 100%? And if that's the case, either will there be increased fees for organizations, or will the custodians be less willing to provide the overtime?
Mr. Brackett?
Yes, I think that in answer to your question, yes, we will net out the cost of the custodian. And so that, to be honest with you, it is not totally clear to us what is the arrangement between the user and the custodian. That therein lies some of the problem that we're trying to correct. So there will be a flat amount that would be charged for a custodial work hour, and it will roll up, and it will be paid to the custodian, and the appropriate taxes will be taken out and charged accordingly. I want to make it real clear that this is not a fee to make money. We're not attempting to make money on this. We're trying to cover our costs and tighten up the procedures and bring them into line and to provide the necessary liability coverage that is necessary to protect everyone who's using the facilities.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments on Article 32, which used to be on the consent calendar? I see none. All those in favor of Article 32 signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. We're now on Article 33. Call on Selectman Chair Lawrence O'Brien for a motion.
Moving the words of the article, Mr. Moderator.
Yes, does that receive a second? It does.
Okay, well, back to the scheme. All right, well, hopefully everybody can hear me. Good evening. This is Article 33. It is for the Sudbury Affordable Housing Trust Fund. Who's working? The arrow to the right. Okay, here we go. All right, this is way too much multitasking for me, but we'll try. Okay, the Affordable Housing Trust Fund is, we're asking you to approve the establishment of this trust fund. It will be a dedicated trust fund to capture and spend money to create and preserve affordable housing in the Sudbury. As many of you know, dedicating town funds for a single purpose requires one of two activities to take place, either a special act by the legislature or a home rule petition to be filed coming out of town meeting with the legislature. Article 33 is authorized under new state legislation that was passed in January of 2005, and it allows towns to create special trust funds that can be used exclusively for affordable housing. It allows funds to be appropriated directly into the trust fund without going into the general fund, and for these funds to be used without further town meeting appropriation for the specified purpose of the trust. New legislation was initiated by the state to coincide with mandates that all cities and towns provide affordable housing for its residents and the documented housing shortage within the state. Most towns are not in compliance with the 10% affordable housing requirement. Most towns cannot even get a foothold in the affordable housing market due to the difficulties in approving below market rate housing, including political unwillingness and an overall level of complexity in creating this type of housing. Many towns want to provide housing to residents who cannot otherwise find decent accommodations, but find it hard to do so. Sudbury is one of these towns. We have enacted the Community Preservation Act, which, as one of the requirements, sets aside money for affordable housing. We have written and adopted a housing plan which sets forth our goals for the creation of diverse housing. We are a member of the West Metro Home Consortium, which fosters regional affordable housing. We have recently received funding under the Soft Second Loan program by the state, which makes the possibility of home ownership realistic for lower-income households. We are attempting to create some diversity in our housing mix. This trust makes it one step easier towards meeting our goals. The basic premise of the trust is to collect money and then have the ability to spend it as needed without further town meeting approval. The need for this is to be able to react to the market if land or property becomes available for sale. A typical town meeting cycle once a year in early April does not meet the demands of the real estate market. One of the most critical uses of these funds will be to purchase lower-priced homes that are slated for teardown. These properties will then have an affordable housing restriction placed on them and will be sold to low and moderate income households at the established affordable prices. These units will then be added to our affordable housing inventory. This type of program requires the availability of funds in a relatively short period of time. Our intent is to recommend that the 10% required minimum of the CPA funds for housing be placed directly into the trust fund account each year, beginning in 2007. This will seed the trust and give it enough money to start its activities. Larger expenditures that might come up in the area of housing would be still go through normal channels and would be presented to town meeting for your approval. Other smaller accounts that the town receives, amounts that the town receives, will also be requested to be placed directly into the trust, such as federal home funds and other housing grants that the town may apply for and receive. This trust fund will be administered by the Board of Selectmen and a Board of Trustees and will operate under existing municipal laws. Open meeting laws, borrowing, and procurement are all governed by the same municipal laws as all other boards and committees of the town. Decisions will be made in the public arena with input from residents. Again, the major benefit of the trust is to be able to have access to funding in a quicker fashion to react to current market conditions and availability of property and homes. Appropriations into the fund must be approved by town meeting, but they will typically be of a general nature and not project specific. This is a chart that is part of our housing plan that's been put together by the Community Housing Committee and has been approved by the Board of Selectmen. You will see that there are different target dates and different activities, and some have been completed, some are ongoing, and some are set forth for future activity. There's a second page to this. Those of you that are looking at the far right and see L/M, that stands for either low or moderate. And those of you that are looking about towards the middle where it says St. Anson's Church, that was a committee that the Board of Selectmen put together when there was the possibility that that parish was going to be closed by the Archdiocese. That situation has been reversed, so it still exists as an activity on the chart, but does not appear to be slated for, the land does not appear to be slated for sale by the Archdiocese of Boston. And you can see that there are activities going out as far as 2007. The goal of the trust is to implement the recommendations of the housing plan as I've just presented. We follow this. If we follow this plan, our goal is to produce 2 to 8 units of affordable housing each year. We're not interested in overdeveloping the town with affordable units, but to slowly, steadily, and methodically increase our numbers to an adequate level in ways that do not overburden any one particular neighborhood or any one school district. Creation of this trust was one of the first recommendations of the housing plan. Housing creation will be facilitated by a part-time housing specialist position, which has been approved for funding by the Community Preservation Committee using administrative funds. This new position will be advertised and hired in the near future and will enhance our ability to move forward with our work on this issue. Having dedicated staff is critical to this program. We have not been able to initiate projects that are stated goals and priorities of the various boards. This has been evident particularly in the housing field, where over $800,000 of CPA funds have been appropriated to date with no expenditure. Staff will be available to coordinate housing activities amongst various town housing groups. Essentially, now is the time. We have a plan which helps Sudbury provide for its residents' housing needs. We have almost $1 million from the Community Preservation account that is from Community Preservation Act that is specifically earmarked and only allowed to be used for housing purposes. That is, and we are looking to create this affordable housing trust so that we'll have the ability to react quickly. We'll soon have dedicated staff dedicated staff person to oversee the program. Essentially, if we're serious about our commitment to providing affordable housing in Sudbury, then the creation of this trust is a very effective way of meeting that goal. The Board of Selectmen, the Community Housing Committee, the Planning Board, and the Sudbury Housing Authority all support Article 33, and we ask and urge your support as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee recommends approval.
Thank you. And Mr. O'Brien, you already said that the Board of Selectmen recommends approval. Thank you. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 33? Yes, right here.
I'm Joe Sabowski. I live at 799 Boston Post Road, and I'm the associate member of the Planning Board. The Planning Board unanimously supports passage of this article. Creation of a trust dealing entirely with affordable housing will enable the town to begin meeting the housing needs of lower-income citizens, as well as give us a great deal of local control over how and where we allow this type of development. Both the 2001 Master Plan and the 2005 Housing Plan recommend encouraging greater diversity of housing opportunities. Both plans call for the reuse and redevelopment of existing housing, or in common terms, saving homes slated as teardowns to maintain diversity of housing while preserving neighborhood character. The housing plan specifically recommends the formation of a local housing trust as a means of exercising the highest degree of control over the development and occupancy of affordable housing units. Once funds are appropriated into the trust, a multitude of simple real estate transactions will be easily accomplished, and the smaller homes in town can begin to be preserved. Over time, other programs can be developed to both develop and retain affordable housing stock. We have a plan. We have a source of funding from the CPA. What we need now is an entity to administer these funds and dedicated staff to work on projects. A request for part-time staffing is currently under discussion with the Community Preservation Committee, who have indicated a willingness to consider funding such a position. We have not been able to accomplish many of our housing goals due to a limited staff capacity. However, now the steps are in place to proceed. We urge your support of this article.
Thank you. Before we go to our next speaker, does anybody need a warrant? Because we have some extra ones up here. If you want to raise your hand, I can have the Boy Scouts deliver them to you. Just keep your hands up.
Could you come here and grab some of those warrants and give it to whoever's raising
them? And could you come and pick the warrants over here? Could you just keep raising your hands and the Boy Scouts will bring a warrant to you? Way in the back. And right here. Just bring them along the sides. Thank you. Keep your hands up, and we're gonna. While that's happening, we're gonna go on to the next speaker. Yes. Yes, sir. Right there.
Bob Stein, 7 Thompson Drive. I'm all for affordable housing, but my biggest concern is. If there will be some restrictions in the purchase so that the person isn't able to flip the property 2 years later as we have on the Frost Farms. So many towns that do have affordable housing have restrictions that they cannot sell it 5, 10, 15, 20 years later except for the consumer price index, which is a nominal amount per year, 2 or 3%. And I want to make sure that those restrictions are in there so that the town isn't giving something at a very reduced rate and then that person flips it a year or two later. And that's the problem that we have with Frost Farms, that the people purchased it for $170,000, $180,000, and now 2 years later they're selling them for $400,000, and the town lost that opportunity for affordable housing.
Thank you, Mr. O'Brien.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. There first needs to be a clearly defined line drawn for those of you that might be wondering what the differences are. And Frost Farm was developed under a bylaw that is on the books in Sudbury called the Incentive Senior Development Bylaw. It calls for moderate priced housing. It is not affordable priced housing. It works with a completely different formula. And due to an adjustment by the federal government, there was a spike after the units were developed. And yes, those people living up there that do decide to cash out early will be able to walk away with a profit. Many of those people, though, are staying there because they feel it's their last place of residence, or they've put their units under a price restriction moving forward. This article for an affordable, and that's the key word, affordable housing trust will follow the affordable guidelines that are set by the state and by the federal government. And those will be maintained in perpetuity. And one of the primary responsibilities of the housing specialist will be to make certain that when units are sold, that they are sold within the guidelines that are prescribed by the state and federal government. The two types of development, the two pricing structures, and the two formats for resale are completely different. One is formula-driven, and one is completely driven by numbers that are set based on size of family, geographic area, and income in reference to the affordable housing. The two should not be confused in any way, and they're completely unrelated to one another.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard? Yes, gentleman in the rear.
Phil Cooper, Cedar Creek Road. The proposal as presented seems to me to be a very nice way to put the Sudbury Housing Program on a sort of automatic pilot. We approve the trust. The trust automatically gets some money. The trust goes away, and the trust does its business. And according to the report printed in the warrant, this trust will have, or board will have, authority to buy and sell, borrow and lend money, and so on. These things are prerogatives of the, or have been prerogatives of the annual meeting. That's this group right here. This is how we control what goes on in the town. And I want to bring to your attention that the decision you're making here, reflect into the future on what the ability of this town meeting will have to control what happens in the town. If you want to do that, that is a decision that you certainly should make. But be sure you understand that you're making that decision and that it has consequences and implications into the future. If the trust wants to do something we don't like, well, our prerogative, our alternative then is to, I guess, change the Board of Selectmen, who I presume is the chief executive officer of the town, or other committees who are on the trust. We no longer have that direct control, but have to rely on representative elected process. I have a problem with this. I think if we have an opportunity in town, which is significant, that it may be worth bringing it to town meeting so that, in fact, we can debate it and vote on it up or down. Town meeting can be inconvenient, and I understand it may be inconvenient, but it's also a protection for what we want to do and how we want to have our town and how we, as the residents of the town, have control. So please, think about what you're doing.
Thank you. Yes, on the aisle.
Thank you. Judy Deutsch, 41 Concord Road, Sudbury. I'm speaking for the Community Housing Committee. And the Community Housing Committee unanimously supports passage of this article, in part because the 2005 housing plan that the town adopted recommends creation of a trust as one of the first actions in implementing the housing plan. This housing trust will form the basis for the creation of affordable housing in Sudbury. It will coordinate the activities of the various housing committees and boards. The powers granted to the trust will enable it to compete in the real estate market, both in the retention of small homes for affordable housing and in the development of multi-unit projects. The hope is that it will make progress in utilizing Community Preservation Act housing funds that have to date been appropriated but untouched. The state has authorized the creation of housing trusts due to the identified problems that many towns, including Sudbury, have in creating affordable housing. The constraints of dealing with a once-a-year funding cycle at town meeting limits the town's efforts to create affordable housing, and Sudbury has said it wants to create affordable housing. We need this mechanism to move forward with this issue. The goal of the housing plan, as Selectman O'Brien said, is to create 2 to 8 units of affordable housing annually. The approach taken in the housing plan is a slow, steady increase in the number of affordable units so as not to upset the neighborhoods where this housing will be constructed. We realize that affordable housing is widely seen as an undesirable land use. However, we do have an obligation and a mandate to provide housing to the lower income citizens of the Commonwealth. And we believe that we can make this housing attractive and a valuable asset to the community. Places that our teachers, firefighters, policemen, and our children can make their homes and remain in the community that they serve and grew up in. That is our goal. We urge your support of this article.
Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, that gentleman right there. Yes, you. Yes, stand up, please.
Pascal Charnay, 152 Newbridge Road. This question is for town council. What would it take to revoke or dissolve this trust? Should we enact it tonight?
Is the question, what would it take to dissolve this trust if we enacted it tonight?
Yes, just about the town's ability to control the situation,
okay.
Try to get out of hand at a later future generation.
What would it take to dissolve the trust that we created?
It would require another vote of town meeting.
Okay. Yes, right here on the aisle. For those of you who didn't, town council said it would require another vote at town meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. James Gardner, 4 Longfellow Road. I have a three-part question, sir. I was wondering if we could hear a little bit about the notional process and timeline for establishing this trust should this article pass. I was wondering also whether the selectmen have a comment on how they envision the housing trust working with our very active Sudbury Housing Authority. And third, I was wondering if the Sudbury Housing Authority would be commenting on their thoughts on this article.
Great. So I'm going to turn this over for questions 1 and 2 to Mr. Selectman O'Brien.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. If I recall all the questions, the first one was the
How long would it take to set up this trust?
Yes, if this article were to pass, the selectmen would put it in, would begin working on it immediately. We would do our typical fashion. The composition calls for a minimum of 7. We could make it more if we wanted. The executive body would be the 3 members of the Board of Selectmen, and then I would say that we would most likely look to have 1 representative from the Sudbury Housing Authority, 1 from the community housing committee, possibly 1 from the planning board. That would be 6, and then we would most likely want to have some citizens at large, and we would ask for those that were interested to apply and to be a member, and we could establish a number greater than 7 if we felt that was appropriate. Does that answer the first
question? Yes. The second question was, how do you see this housing trust interfacing with the Sudbury Housing Authority? One way would be, I presume, that there'd be a member of the Housing Authority on this trust.
Yes. As I had stated, we would look to have 1 of their members on this group of trustees. I would say that the interaction would be very close, but it would also be complementary. The mission of the Sudbury Housing Authority is to provide affordable rental housing. The primary mission of this trust would be to complete the other side of that equation, as I had said in my presentation, for home ownership. And I would go in addition to that and say that the current numbers for home ownership, when we talk about affordable housing, because some people see that as a dirty phrase or a questionable phrase, home ownership for a family of 4 can have an income as high as $60,000 a year. Home ownership are people that are going to apply for and be approved through the traditional type of mortgage process, possibly receiving some help from a soft second loan to accommodate a mortgage or a first-time home buyer program. But like any of us in this room that are homeowners, the typical qualification and requirements and credit worthiness will all be required for these sort of units to be purchased and owned by individuals.
Thank you. Is there a member of the Sudbury Housing Authority present to answer that question? Yes. Could you bring a mic over here? Identify yourself for the record, please.
Stephen Sugru, 18 Briar Patch Lane.
The Sudbury Housing Authority very simply supports this article and is in support of the mission of the CHC, the Community Housing Committee. It is not, we are not a part, we are not, we do have one representative on the CHC, but it is not in our immediate plans how we would ourselves utilize it. It's just that as members of the Housing Authority, we are naturally interested in increasing the ways in which we can, the main ways, have as many options as possible to build and, in this case, even buy housing that already exists. Although, as the selectman just said, our main impetus is to have housing that is that people may rent, that families may rent, and whereas the CHC, I would think, is primarily going to be for home ownership. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 33? Yes, back there.
Article 14, Churchill Street. I am concerned about this because the Community Preservation Act includes a takings clause. Now, when they sold us the Community Preservation Act, we were told that we would have the right to vote yea or nay on every project. And as you can see in your warrant tonight, we are voting yea and nay on every project. This now takes the housing piece, the town meeting authority away from us, and there is a takings clause in the Community Preservation Act, and the Community Preservation Committee has that power, and I don't like this. And because of that, I would urge to defeat this article.
Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, gentleman in the middle.
Eric Richard, 363 Maynard Road. Going to what one of the previous speakers asked, it seems like this is a pretty large transference of power from the town meeting to this new trust here. And I guess I don't necessarily have an opinion as to whether it's a good thing or not, but I guess that transference, it seems, needs to be justified by a pretty good reason for explaining why the current system is broken. And it seems like the justification that's been given here is largely that the annual cycle makes it difficult for us to effectively use the funds to purchase affordable housing. I guess one thing that would be very useful to me is if someone could speak to some kind of tangible data about why, you know, every year we've had discussions about allocating money towards buying affordable housing, how the annual cycle of the town meeting hurts our ability to execute on that, and why that would be essentially justification for this transference of power from the town meeting to this trust.
Mr. O'Brien?
Thank you. The immediate straightforward answer would be flexibility. The structure of town meeting is that we meet once a year in early April, and if funds are not appropriated, typically funds are appropriated and they are specifically dedicated and targeted to a project, and as we have in the 9 CPA articles later this evening. If you have gone up and down Horse Pond Road, almost where it intersects with Peckham and Pratt's Mill, you will have noticed in the last 12 months there have been two or three homes that were small, older model homes that would be potentially ideal targets of this trust that have been sold and torn down and rebuilt as larger, more expensive homes, thus taking those potential units for affordable home ownership away and replaced with larger, more expensive homes, more bedrooms, taking up more space on the site, etc. Currently, there is no available funds. The town does not have the ability, whether a homeowner comes to us or we were to hear from a realtor or we were to be approached on a property, we do not have the ability to write a check and to be involved in that process. This would ultimately create that flexibility that I had mentioned.
Secondly, we get approached occasionally by we, meaning community housing, planning board, selectman's office, whoever it might be, in an estate situation where, my parent or my grandparent died and we'd like to make the land available to the town first. We'd like to see these certain things done with it. We don't have the ability to respond. And when we say we would love to talk to you and negotiate with you and we would like to bring things to a point where we would have it ready for next year's town meeting, typically that immediately puts a cold blanket on the discussions, and they're looking for faster turnaround, so they go in another direction. I could go on, but does that address your question?
Okay. Yes.
John Donovan, Old Orchard Road. I might have missed it. I'm getting older. But is there any restrictions on how much money the trust can spend in one shot? Can they blow the whole thing in one piece of property? Or are they restricted at a certain point they have to bring it to town meeting and get approval? Or is it carte blanche?
Mr. O'Brien?
Yeah, we could only we'd be limited by the amount of money that would be available in the fund. The immediate transfer, because of the $800,000 that has accumulated at the 10% rate, would be the first transfer. But I think to address your question and also a question that was asked earlier, the power still would remain with town meeting to do the annual transfer of the Community Preservation Act funds, the 10% minimum that is dedicated and must be used for housing purposes as required in the statute. The direct answer to your question is no. If there was an $800,000 land purchase, for example, that might accommodate multiple units of housing, sure, the trust could make the decision to pursue that that piece of property. But that would be the extent of the limitations. Did that answer the question, Mr. Moderator?
Did I understand you to say that money, the town meeting votes on the transfer of the money from the CPC funds to the housing trust?
That is correct. So this year, the accumulated balance is approximately $800,000. Then next year, when there would be new collections from property from the surcharge, as well as the matching funds from the state, there would be a new 10%. Amount available, and then that would become a pretty much an annual town meeting article to ask for the approval for the transfer.
And town meeting could say yes, or town meeting could say no.
That would be correct. The requirement, though, either way, would still be that the funds be dedicated solely and exclusively for housing purposes.
At some point in time.
As required by the CPA statute.
At some point in time, but not necessarily that particular year.
That's correct.
Okay. Any other questions? Yes, this, actually, Mr. Lyons, you haven't spoken yet.
I had a couple of questions about how the affordable housing system works. The first one is, I was at a meeting not too long ago where a lady was lobbying for more rental housing in town, affordable rental housing in town. And one of the arguments that she used was the fact that once somebody gets in rental housing, they monitor their financial well-being, if you will. In other words, if let's say it's a lady who had a baby and wasn't working, and then she might be a well-paid lady and started working later, and they no longer need affordable housing, but if they were renting, the town would be monitoring that and they wouldn't be eligible. If they bought the house, my understanding is that they would continue to be eligible. And maybe you can comment on that. And then the second question has to do with if somebody buys an affordable housing unit, what if they wanted to expand it to make it bigger? How does that play into what they might get for it? Well, first of all, can they do it? And then secondly, how does that play into what they might get for it should they sell it later?
Mr. O'Brien?
I'll take the first question, and then I'm going to look to the town planner for an answer to the second. Okay. If I understood your question correctly, I'll defer to Sudbury Housing as to how they monitor income levels on their rental, on their tenants in their units. But what happens with the affordable units is that the price is controlled by the state. So, yes, you could move in. You could be at a position, a station in your life where economically you qualify for this, and you might live there 30 years and then go to sell the unit. You are not going to have full market Sudbury type appreciation because the controls that are placed on it by the state and the federal government in perpetuity will keep that price down. So there'll be no gain made. But could the individual's income rise to a point where 8, 10, 12, 15 years down the road, they might not qualify for housing, or maybe they got married in their dual-income family? Yes, that could happen, and that's allowable under the state and federal statutes. So the controls are on the resale side.
Town planner to address the either one or both of those questions.
Thank you. Jody Kablak, the town planner. The second question arises out of whether an addition to an affordable home could be made. And typically, you know, there are restrictions in the deed saying that you cannot increase the value of the home up to a certain point. Many of the developments that we're seeing now, the affordable units that we're seeing now, are being constructed in what's called 40B housing, which has typically been condominium housing in Sudbury. Condominiums, you're not allowed to increase the size of the home without a change to the master deed. So those restrictions are in place. But should a single-family affordable housing development be proposed, there would typically be restrictions that would prohibit the expansion of the units so that you don't take them above a certain market value. If I could just speak to one other point that's been made, I think the debate has been wonderful tonight. I think that people are starting to understand the complexity of this issue. Affordable housing development is a very complex issue. That's one of the reasons why we've not been able to make good cross inroads with it. But the trust will also act as basically an entity that can do things that the town cannot do. And speaking to the timing issue and the constraints of the town meeting annual cycle, if the town were to purchase a house, a small house, say a teardown house, and then want to restrict it and resell it, the sale of that property does need a town meeting vote. So every single family home would need a town meeting vote. The trust, though, can hold property and can sell it again to a lower or moderate income family without a town meeting vote. And again, that is the main goal that we're trying to do. We think that it has a twofold purpose. We're going to try to save the teardown, save the smaller housing stock, preserve the character of the neighborhood, and also achieve our goal of providing some affordable housing in town. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 33? Yes, there's a hand over there.
Adam Miller, Knobscot Road. Given the aesthetics of much of the current development in the town, I'd urge approval of this article on the basis that preserving the current housing stock, particularly those that could be targeted as teardowns, is a very valid point in and of itself, even apart from providing affordable housing.
Great. Anyone else wish to be heard? I see none. All those in favor, this is a majority vote. Oh, excuse me? Whereabouts? Someone who hasn't spoken yet? Yes, sir.
135 Lake Robin Road, Sudbury. I was interested in finding out if the trust has the ability to take public land, such as school property, like was considered in the previous town meeting.
So the question is, can the housing trust take public land? Is that the question?
Yep, like school public property, such as was considered in the last town meeting.
Selectman O'Brien.
The direct answer is no, and the question or the issue that was raised was last town meeting or the meeting before, there was an article that came before town meeting asking for this body to approve the transfer of land that was held by Sudbury Public Schools to the selectmen to be used for affordable housing. Town meeting said no to that, and if that were an event that would happen in the future,
an article would need to be brought to town meeting that would require, that would ask for town meeting to transfer that land to the trust, and Sudbury Public Schools would have to agree that they would need to give it up. So there could be no direct taking as you've asked or described.
Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 33? Who hasn't spoken yet? I see none. Although this is a majority vote, all those in favor of Article 33 signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. We're now going to move on to Article 34, where Selectman Keller will make the motion. Anyone else require a warrant who doesn't have one? Just raise your hand. I guess we're all set. Selectman Keller. Mr.
Moderator. Move that the town authorize and direct the Board of Selectmen for a sum not less than $1 on such terms as the Selectmen may determine to enter into a long-term ground lease for a term to be determined in excess of 20 years, conveying a leasehold interest in a portion of town-owned land shown on Assessor's Map H9 Parcel 62, not to exceed 2,500 square feet, to the Sudbury Foundation or other appropriate entity for the purpose of construction of an addition to the rear of the Sudbury Grange building and to accommodate such additional accessory uses of land necessary to accommodate such use on such terms as the Board of Selectmen shall authorize, and to further authorize and direct the Board of Selectmen to grant such easements, rights of way, licenses, or other appropriate transfers as may be required, in the opinion of the Selectmen, to accommodate the foregoing addition, and if necessary, to authorize and direct the Board of Selectmen to petition the Great General Court of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts in the event that such special legislation is required.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Keller.
Presentations were made by Susan Uliano for the Sudbury Foundation.
That'd be fine.
My name is Susan Uliano, and I'm a trustee of the Sudbury Foundation. The Sudbury Foundation is a private charitable foundation established in 1952 by the late Herbert and Esther Atkinson, who lived on Dutton Road here in Sudbury. The foundation is an independent, nonprofit organization governed by a 5-member board of trustees. It's an entity separate from the town. The Sudbury Foundation makes grants from its endowment to qualifying organizations in Sudbury, neighboring communities, and elsewhere in New England. The majority of the grants directly or indirectly benefit the Sudbury community. The foundation also operates the Atkinson Scholarship Program. Currently, there are 60 local students enrolled in this program, receiving a total of $300,000 in scholarship support. The foundation has supported many community projects in Sudbury. For example, the foundation helped the town construct Atkinson Pool, furnish the senior center, and renovate the library. Your support of Article 34 will help enable the foundation to undertake another community project, this one to preserve the Sudbury Grange Hall. The project we are proposing will be financed entirely by the foundation. There will be no cost to the town now or in the future. The Sudbury Grange Hall number 121 is the small Greek Revival building that's nestled between the Presbyterian Church and Town Hall in Sudbury Center. It was built in 1848 as a simple schoolhouse and it was later enlarged. In 1881, the town sold the building to the Grange, and it became the center of Sudbury agricultural life. For over a century, residents have gathered here for companionship, political discussions, and education. Today, this building continues to serve the needs of the Grange organization. Over the past few decades, it's also been used by the town and community groups. It served as the center of the town's bicentennial celebration in 1976, and it was home to the Children's Department of the Goodnow Library during the library renovation and expansion. This Grange Hall, like Grange Halls throughout New England, is at risk. To assist the Grange organization to protect the historic Grange Hall building and to create a centrally located, handicapped accessible facility for community use, the foundation has entered into an agreement with the Grange to acquire, upgrade, and restore the Grange Hall. The Grange membership would enjoy the continued free use of the second floor meeting room, and the Sudbury Foundation would create a self-contained office on the first floor. The meeting room would be available for use by town groups, including town boards, community and nonprofit organizations, when it was not being used by the Grange. Assuming that all the conditions agreed to are met, the foundation plans to restore and preserve this historic and structurally sound building, replacing the HVAC, plumbing, and electrical systems, insulating the building, restoring or replacing windows, and making the building handicapped accessible and code compliant. This undertaking will require an addition to the rear of the building with a new first floor entrance, handicapped accessible bathrooms, a stairway, an elevator, and a second floor kitchenette off of the community meeting room. There's insufficient land to build this proposed 649 square foot addition on the land that's currently owned by the Grange. Therefore, the foundation seeks to enter into a long-term lease agreement with the town for a small portion of land that would not exceed 2,500 square feet that is adjacent to the rear of the Grange building. Now we need to go to the... We're going to look at the plan. I don't have the pointer, but I think most of you are pretty familiar with Town Center. That does work? All right. Anybody else wants to hear me, right? This shows Concord Road, Old Sudbury Road. It shows the Town Hall and the Presbyterian Church. This is Town Hall. Oops, I can't do this with my left hand. Presbyterian Church. The Grange is the building in between. This small portion is where a shed will be dismantled and the addition would be built. And the little area around it is the small parcel of land that would be subject to the lease agreement. Is the next one? This is a close-up version of the Grange Hall. Again, you can see Sudbury Town Hall and the Presbyterian Church, the Grange Hall building in between, and this gives you a little better picture of the parcel of land that would be subject to the lease agreement and the scale of the proposed addition. Now the next one. We've been working on these plans with engineers, architects, and builders. This is a drawing that shows the front of the building, and you can see off to the left a little small portion that would show where the addition would be seen from the front. On the right, you see this view that you would see if you're standing in the driveway between Town Hall and the Grange. And the addition is the part to the rear. You'll see there's a doorway that would be a new entrance to the building. Since the foundation began discussions with the Grange about 2.5 years ago, the selectmen have been aware of this project and the need to access this small piece of land to make the project feasible. They have been supportive of the project as beneficial to the town, consistent with their vision for the center of Sudbury. Without significant investment, the foundation believes that the Grange Hall will fall into disrepair and ultimately be lost. Restored, maintained, and used, a renovated Grange can be an aesthetic, historic, and community asset for the Sudbury Grange and for the town of Sudbury. We urge you to approve Article 34. Thank you.
Thank you. Ralph Verney for the Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Town Council has asked me to inform you that your warrant on the percentage of vote is incorrect. This will be a two-thirds vote. Anyone wish to be heard on Article 34? Please raise your hand.
Mr. Moderator.
Oh, I'm sorry. Selectman Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Obviously, making the motion, you would expect the selectman to support this, and we do wholeheartedly. I think the community is fortunate to have the Sudbury Foundation step up here. We've got a historic building, the Grange Building, that, as has been described, is on the verge of going somewhat over the threshold of starting to get into disrepair, and we don't want to see that happen, and the foundation is providing the funds. In order to modernize the building, it needs the additional space at the back. The town will be giving up essentially a small area of what's presently parking space area. So we urge your favorable vote. And the selectmen have received communications from the Grange officially asking us to support this, and from the Presbyterian Church, which is the neighbor on the other side of the Grange building, we've received correspondence from them and from the Historical Commission as well. So based on those additional recommendations, we ask for your support.
Yes. Anyone wish to be heard on this article? Yes, sir.
My name is Bob Gottberg. I live at 89 Mossman Road. I'm a member of the Grange. I'm a member of the Grange Executive Committee. And we wholly support this article. It is very important that we continue with this building there. It is a historic site. And I don't know whether you're aware of it or not. It used to be a single-story schoolhouse, and the second floor is now the current second floor used to be the first floor. They raised it up and put the first floor underneath it. So it is a historic building. It was moved from another part of the town center to where it's located now. It's very important. And the Sudbury Foundation is very interested in continuing with this project, and it will benefit the town. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 34? I see none. Yes, way back, waving the hands. That's a great idea. And I can see you.
Mara Houston, Peckham Road. I'm curious where the land is in terms of the parking lot that's back there, because the parking lot's very limited when it comes to the school parking in that area.
Yes, the question was the parking limited in this area, and will we be losing any parking spaces? Selectman Keller.
Thank you. I believe this square footage is about 2,500 square foot. The studies are that the loss of parking spaces will not adversely affect the parking for the Noyes School, which is nearest, and for the town hall as well. So we don't see it as it's not a significant loss in terms of accommodating public usage of the area.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 34? I see none. All those in favor of Article 34 signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes by well more than two-thirds. We're now going to move on to Article 35. Selectman Trubinsky for a motion.
Yes, Mr. Moderator, thank you. Move to indefinitely postpone Article 35.
Does that receive a second? It does.
Yes, Mr. Moderator. As people may or may not know, the Sudbury-Wayland Septage Committee is in the process of doing some capital improvements to the septage facility on Route 20. And depending on how the capital improvements are conducted, either through using existing capital funds or bonding, that is a concern to the town of Sudbury. The existing agreement between Wayland and Sudbury does not allow the Sudbury Town Meeting to approve the bonding article. So therefore, if the town of Wayland bonded this, the town of Sudbury Town Meeting would not have a say in the matter. Our proposal is, since we don't know how the Wayland-Sudbury Subject Committee is going to go forward, to communicate with the Wayland Board of Selectmen, indicating that there's a structural deficiency in the interlocal agreement, and as we go forward, we need to fix that structural agreement so that the town of Sudbury Town Meeting will have a say if bonding is done, so the town can vote on any bonding article.
Thank you. And that's the report of the Board of Selectmen also in favor of the motion.
Yes,
Finance Committee, Sheila Stewart.
Finance Committee supports this.
Okay. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 34, the 35, the motion for indefinite postponement? I see none. All those in favor of the motion signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. We're now on Article 36, the beginning of the Community Preservation Committee's articles. I call on Chris Morley, the co-chair of that committee, to make a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to approve the recommendation of the Community Preservation Committee to appropriate $32,000 from Community Preservation Act funds for the purpose of harvesting annually for the next 4 years, beginning in 2007, the invasive plants in Carding Mill Pond, said harvesting to be carried out and paid for by the Hopbrook Protection Association, with such documents and expenses reimbursed by the town. All appropriations will be allocated to the open space category and funded from fiscal year 07.
Does that receive a second? It does. Frank Lyons, Hopbrook Protection Association, will make the presentation.
Actually, first time speaking. Sorry.
Excuse me?
The first time.
And he will speak after Chris Morley finishes speaking.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. As you can see from your warrant, the next 10 articles are recommendations from the Community Preservation Committee. I'm Chris Morley, as just stated, the Planning Board representative of the CPC and the CPC's co-chair this year. As we have in years past, I would like to take 5 minutes to give you some overall information about the CPA, and then how we will proceed tonight, and then we'll address Article 36. As a reminder, the CPA is a state program offering several different ways in which communities may choose to participate or choose not to. Sudbury has chosen to use the CPA and to collect a tax surcharge of 3%. In so doing, we qualify for a 100% match of the revenues that we raise. CPA revenues are accounted for separately from other town revenues and expended only by vote of town meeting upon recommendation by the CPC. First slide, please, if it's not up there already. Nope, that's the last one. That's it, thanks. Money is going to be spent in 4 different areas. Many in Sudbury, in understandable shorthand, think of the CPA as an open space law or a land bank, which is not totally wrong, as the vast majority of funds that Sudbury has appropriated to date and that we envision at this time will be appropriated in the future are dedicated to open space. However, in several other communities, the CPA is actually thought of as a community housing law, as that is where almost all of their spending goes. Many suburban towns are devoting a huge proportion of their revenues, CPA revenues, to recreation projects. And several, those with numerous aging historic resources, have spent their CPA funds addressing that need. Second slide, please. Oops, that's okay. The state statute requires earmarking and setting aside, or spending, a minimum of 10% of revenues in the first 3 categories listed here. The remainder of revenues can be appropriated among the 4 areas as your town desires. The Sudbury CPC has been following a policy of roughly spending, over time, about 10% in the areas of community housing, historic preservation, and recreation. The goal of this policy is to preserve revenue for future open space projects. The 10% figure is not hard and fast, and we don't reject projects solely on this basis. But in the absence of an especially compelling project, this rough budgeting has and will be a factor in whether the CPC forwards a project for town meeting approval. Third slide, please. Another important CPC policy requires project proponents, when at all possible, to work their project ideas with the most appropriate town committee prior to applying to the CPC. In this way, for instance, an historic preservation project would first be vetted by the Historical Commission and the Historic District Commission. Even after presenting to the CPC, project proponents are urged to present and gain the support of most of the committees in town. Only then, in December before the warrant closes, does the CPC vote whether to recommend projects to town meeting or not. By then, several dozen town committee members have seen each project's presentation, had an opportunity to ask questions, and to review with other members and with town staff, and the chance to vote. Fourth slide, please. One last slide before we move on. My friends and neighbors, and fans of Channel 8, apparently, have sought me over the last few months and asked for a rough idea of where we stand after 4 years of the CPA. State and local revenues, appropriations, and expenditures occur in two different fiscal years, complicating matters. It's a question of what you count and when. In this slide here, we've picked a conservative point in year 4-5 to give you a kind of income statement. Importantly, please note that included for your benefit are all of next year's proposed expenditures from the articles that are before you tonight. Those articles, in fact, form a significant proportion of the numbers that you see here for recreation, community housing, and historic preservation. You can also see here that CPA savings are quite substantial. The town accountant loves it when they call it savings. As a former assistant controller, however, I personally feel comfortable with somewhat less conservative numbers. In this chart, we've counted next year's possible expenses, but I'm also confident that Sudbury's taxpayers will indeed pay their taxes next year, and that God, the economy, and the town manager willing, the CPA fund will be credited with a nice amount of interest on its savings. So what do I tell people who stop me at the grocery store? I say that roughly, and over roughly the next year or so, and if all of tonight's articles meet your approval, the town's total CPA revenue today will have amounted to a little over $10 million. CPA reserves, or savings, will amount to a little under $5 million. Another shorthand way to think of it is that we will have accomplished a number of worthy projects and made payments on our bonded open space debt, all with the money that we have raised ourselves here in Sudbury. We have taken the equivalent of our 100% state match and saved it for when we need it most. Now, tonight's program, we'll have you reading the motion, as I've already done for Article 36, and in some cases, giving a brief comment on the article. The more detailed CPC committee report is in your warrant. Then a short presentation will be made. We can all discuss it, vote on it, and move on to the next motion. The last article is the CPA budget, which gives the town accountant the figures that she needs to make it all work. So on to Article 36. The harvesting of Carding Mill Pond is an important environmental effort that prior town meetings have appropriated funds for. This article provides 4 years of funding, by which time the issue of Hopworks' long-term recovery will have been even more thoroughly analyzed and recovery plans proposed. The town has recently established a Ponds and Waterways Committee to examine all of our waterway issues and to suggest strategic solutions to identified problems. The town owns most of Carding Mill Pond as public open space. The upstream entrance to the pond lies at the edge of the Wayside Inn's property. The Community Preservation Coalition guidebook indicates that CPA funding for the preservation of open space includes the removal of invasive plant species, as called for in this article. Now, Frank Lyons of the Hopper Protection Association will discuss the project.
Thank you, Chris. I believe there might... I believe there might be a typo in the article as it was presented on the... Could we go back to Article 36? If you look at the wording of the article, you'll see that it talks about beginning harvesting annually for the next 4 years, beginning in 2007. In the warrant as printed, it says beginning in fiscal 2007, and that's a significant difference. So fiscal 2007 begins in July 1st this year. So, Mr. Moderator, I'm not sure how we change this. It's correct in the printed article. It's not correct as displayed.
The motion should read fiscal year 07? Okay.
It should be corrected in that slide to read fiscal year 2005.
Why don't you finish your presentation, because you've already started, and we'll take a motion to amend after you finish it.
Thank you. Yeah, can you put the what we had before up, please? The part that said it was submitted by the slide presentation I gave you, the PowerPoint presentation. Okay. This is the first picture. It just gives you an example of the issue that we're facing. It shows how ugly Carding Mill Pond can get. You'll see there's no open water there, and there's also a picture of a harvester. That's the harvester we will be using these next 4 years. Perspective on the issue, there are 130 acres of ponds in the watershed. 90 of those are in Sudbury, and Carding Mill Pond is a 40-acre pond. It's one of the largest pond in Sudbury. They're hypereutrophic from nutrient pollution, primarily phosphorus, and as you can see from that previous picture, Carding Mill Pond is the ugliest, if you will. Harvesting makes the problem tolerable. A longer-term remediation plan is necessary. The problem is that it not just looks bad, but it has a putrid odor. It has the smell of rotten eggs, which is sulfur dioxide coming out of the plants. This shows the harvester as it's being loaded into the pond. We borrow this harvester from U.S. Fish and Wildlife. Here's a little bit. We've harvested this pond before. We did it in 1999, 2000, 2004, and 2005. I mentioned the harvester was borrowed from Fish and Wildlife. Our costs have ranged from $1,600 to $7,300. It depends on a number of things. It depends on how long we harvest. It also depends on how much money we have to give Fish and Wildlife for maintenance of the harvester. They reasonably ask people to borrow the harvester from them for contributions to maintain the harvester, and that's a non-trivial task. We have gotten support from the town in the past, a $2,500 stipend, and when that wasn't adequate, the Hopbrook Protection Association made up the difference. We're requesting $32,000 for the next 4 years, and if we don't spend $8,000 on any given year, that money reverts back to the CPA. If this were done by a professional pond harvester, it would cost somewhere between $50,000 and $100,000. And I'd like to point out that it's not just the Hopbrook Protection Association and a harvester driver, if you will, but we've gotten a lot of support from the DPW in the past, and they have agreed to continue to support this in these coming years. The support we get is site preparation for the harvesting, trucking the biomass away after it's harvested, and then clean up if necessary after the harvesting. So you can see our expenses are crane operations, supplies, and harvester maintenance. There's another picture of the harvester going into the pond.
And this last photo shows a couple of people who've been involved in this. The man on the right is Bill Fairbanks, and the reason his picture is significant is that in the past, you know, we've taken the approach if you get enough lemons, you should try and make some lemonade. So we have used the biomass that comes out of this pond and have delivered it to local farmers, and they can use it for fertilizer. We had some students and a professor from Assumption College analyze the nutrient content in the plants that were pulled from this pond, and it is good fertilizer. Okay, thank you for your attention. Before I quit, though, there is one thing, a couple of things I'd like to comment on. I guess there was an article in the paper last week commenting about this article. And there are a couple of things in that article that were not correct, and I'd just like to, you know, if anybody has formed opinions on the basis of that article, I'd like to correct the misconceptions. The first one is that there's no public access to Carding Mill Pond. There certainly is public access to Carding Mill Pond. It's the road that comes right off of Dutton Road. The town owns 24 acres in and around Carding Mill Pond, and there is some historic significance to Carding Mill Pond, at least by association, if not by long-term history. And the association is that, first of all, it's in the Wayside Inn Historic District, and secondly, the Wayside Inn, which is a national historic landmark, owns a good part of the southern end of the pond. So there is a bona fide historic relationship there. The other thing that was in that article that kind of disturbed me a little bit was that there was an implication that there was arsenic in the sediments of the pond. And this information came from a high school student that we actually awarded a scholarship to, who indicated that he saw found some arsenic in the sediments in the watershed. I have a report here that was written by a PhD limnologist, in which they did studies on the sediments in Carding Mill Pond, and there are only trace parts of arsenic in that pond. The other thing that we did, the Hopper Protection Association, as part of our due diligence, is that we took all of the plants. There are four different kind of plants that are in the biomass that comes out of there when we harvest. It's water chestnut, Elodia canadensis, Hydrodictyon, and Alumna. And we had all of them sent to a lab and tested for arsenic, mercury, cadmium, and lead. And there were undetectable elements of any of those undetectable parts of any of those elements in the samples that we sent. So we have done due diligence. We would not have been comfortable letting anybody use it for fertilizer had we not done that. Are there any questions?
Actually, that's my job, Frank. Finance Committee, Sheila Stewart.
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
John Drabinski for the Board of Selectmen.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The ecological health of these ponds is important for us to enjoy this valuable open space resource. So the Board of Selectmen unanimously support this article.
In the words of Frank Lyons, does anyone have any questions? Article 36, comments? Yes.
Lee Michaels, 199 Horse Pond Road. I would like to know what it would cost to have it dredged.
The cost to have it dredged?
Yes.
Okay.
Instead of harvesting. In the long run, it might be less expensive to have it dredged, even though it's probably more expensive initially.
Okay, Mr. Lyons, to answer that question.
That's a complicated question. First of all, if you're going to consider dredging these ponds, there's a matter of timing. We are still receiving nutrient pollution in the form of phosphorus from the Marlboro Easterly Wastewater Treatment Plant. It would not be prudent to consider dredging these ponds until that stopped coming in. We have some estimates from Bill Place, the DPW director, that seem quite reasonable, in the neighborhood of $100,000 plus, when we get to the point where we might be able to consider it. Dredging process, if you will, needs to be evaluated by a number of boards. And the other part of the dredging that is not very obvious to the casual observer is that just to get permission to dredge is a monumental task. It can take a year and a half to 2 years. And you've got to go by the Corps of Engineers, the DEM, obviously the local conservation board, and so on. But it's a complicated process.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, sir. On the aisle.
Don Charles, 92 Blueberry Hill Lane. As I understand it, none of this would be necessary if it weren't for what Marlboro is doing to us. My first part of my question is, what's happening in getting Marlboro to get its act together so that we no longer have all the phosphorus coming in? And the second part of it, I vaguely recall, I may be wrong, but I vaguely recall that a few years ago when we addressed the same issue, we were told that it wasn't necessary to harvest every year, that the harvesting could be done every 2 or 3 years. That may be wrong, but that's my vague memory.
Okay, question one will be answered by Town Council Paul Kenny.
Mr. Moderator, presently we are involved in an appeal with regard to the permitting of the Marlboro plant. That's one plant, the eastern plant. There's also a western plant that's involved in the Assabet River. The town's appeal has been acted upon favorably, in part, at the federal level, and they're presently negotiating with EPA and with the people in the SBET for the construction of both new plants. But in the meantime, the effluent has been mitigated by the order that has come down for the eastern plant, which is the one that serves Marlboro and empties into the Hot Brook area. So it's not... significant progress has been made with regard to that appeal, but it's not over yet, and it's an ongoing. But we're much more optimistic than we were even at this time last year. There's been a significant amount of progress.
Would you be willing to put a time on it?
No.
Okay. I think
when I say no, I wouldn't be able to be willing to put a time, because they're going to be building two plants there, and it's hard to determine. You know, I think you're looking at least a five-year period, and hopefully it'll all be completed within that period of time, but it may be more. But there definitely is a significant progress has been made in the past year.
So your second question was the number of times...
Whether harvesting is really needed annually or can be done every 2 or 3 years.
Mr. Lyons, you can take a mic right from that gentleman.
Uh,
clearly, harvesting is not the long-term solution for this. A water chestnut, the nut itself, when it falls off the plant, it can stay alive in the water for 12 years and still be viable. And it's almost impossible to get to the point where you're going to get all the nuts before they fall off the plants. So what we're really talking about is, quite frankly, symptomatic relief. It's a very dismal symptom. But if you do it every year, you're going to have some improvement in the pond over time, but you're not going to fix the problem totally, and you'll make the pond habitable, if you will, for wildlife that would otherwise not have a habitat for that summer. The other thing that I think you need to keep in mind is that this is coming at a pretty low cost. I mean, we're talking about $4,000 to $5,000 to protect a 40-acre pond, still recognizing that it's symptomatic relief and not a final solution.
Mark Thompson, can that amendment be put up on the board? While we're waiting for that, here we go. Move to amend the motion on the art fixtures and in the words fiscal between 4 years. And adding fiscal year before 2007. That sounds fine to me. Mr. Morley, do you have a motion to amend? He's not here. You're elected.
He just came in.
Chris?
Yes,
Chris? Mr. Cablack, could you read, do you care to make a motion to amend as on the view graph?
Great, I'd like to make a motion to amend this article. I'd like to move to amend under the words of Article 36 by adding fiscal before the word between 4 years and adding FY before 2007.
Thank you. Does that receive a second? Great. Anybody wish to be heard on that? I didn't think so. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? Thank you. The amendment passes. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 36 as it has been amended? Yes. Please stand.
Aline Kaplan, 17 Douglas Drive. I have a comment and a question. The one time I tried to walk down that road by the carding mill, it was clearly marked private property, no trespassing, which may cause the confusion about public access. The question is, the problems caused by Marlboro, but we can't bill them for the solution. The biomass is valuable fertilizer, which we give to the farmers, who don't pay for it. There seems to be a market dynamic missing in this equation. The people who are paying for the solution neither cause the problem nor get any benefit from the solution. And I'd like to know if there's any way we could sell the fertilizer, or if I am paying for this and I'm a gardener, can I get some of the fertilizer, which would at least benefit me a little bit? I'd also love to know what hypereutrophic means. Thank you.
Mr. Lyons, you can't answer the questions.
I guess the first answer is we'd be glad to make arrangements to give anybody in town who wants some fertilizer. If you just give me a call, we'd be glad to make arrangements to give you the fertilizer. It's not clear to me that any farmer is going to pay any money for this just because of the cost of hauling it is significant enough. Bill Fairbanks was using his trucks to haul it a couple of years ago, and we're just glad to get rid of it. But if people want to use it, they're certainly more than welcome to.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 36? I'm sorry?
The question was, what does hypereutrophic mean? I'm sorry, I probably shouldn't use that word without explaining it. it's not as, well, basically what it means is that it supports plant life much better than it supports animal life, and it has to do with things like dissolved oxygen in the water. The dissolved oxygen levels are very low. You get fish kill from things like that in the spring.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 36? I see none. All those in favor of Article 36 as amended, raise your cards. All those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. Article 37, we'll have a motion by Chris Morley.
My apologies. Am I on? My apologies for my part in that confusion. Move to approve the recommendation of the Community Preservation Committee to appropriate $85,725 from Community Preservation Act funds for the purpose of conducting a comprehensive site study of the Longfellow's Wayside Inn 125-acre parcel. Said study to be carried out and paid for by the Wayside Inn Corporation, with such documented expenses reimbursed by the town only in the event that a permanent historic preservation restriction upon the entire property is granted to the town of Sudbury, in content agreeable to the Community Preservation Committee and Town Council, said work to be completed by the end of fiscal year 08. All appropriations will be allocated equally to the open space and historic preservation categories and funded from fiscal year 07 revenues.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Morley?
This motion has two changes from the article as it appears in your warrant. First, the reference to Mass General Laws, Chapter 184, has been removed. Second change is an insertion of language providing that the content of the permanent historic preservation restriction to be granted by the inn to the town is to be approved by both Town Council and the Community Preservation Committee. In the lengthy review process for this project, it was determined that the protection that most had assumed existed for making changes to the Wayside Inn's buildings and grounds was not really there. CPC policy has been that in order for the taxpayers to, as it were, invest in a private property through a CPA project, the town must have some kind of legal interest in that property. The reason for this policy is that the benefit to the town created by the fund expenditure should not disappear blithely without the town having their say in the matter. To financially support a worthy project, only to have a property owner's situation change and the property potentially and significantly altered without town input, we deem unacceptable. We do not believe that the board of the Wayside Inn Corporation has any intention of, for instance, disposing of the property for housing development. But at this point in time, they could. The inn has readily agreed to include the town in a restriction on the property, which will be in addition to the conservation restrictions that the town already holds on a portion of their land. The inn's board, the CPC, and town council have engaged in discussions and document drafts which build on an existing historic certification held by the Mass Historical Commission. However, we were unable to reach complete agreement prior to coming before you tonight. We firmly believe that we will be able to compromise and create a restriction that is acceptable to both sides. However, should we fail, the result is that the inn will not get reimbursed for this project. The Wayside Inn is at the beginning of a long planning process, with this project being one of the early steps. We believe that the inn will benefit if they are constructively engaged with town staff and committees during this process. And the town will benefit greatly by having some role in shaping the future of those 125 historic acres. Now, Fred Pryor of the Wayside Inn Corporation will discuss the project.
Fred Pryor, 221 Knobscott Road. I'm president of the trustees of the Wayside Inn, and it's appropriate that this come after Hop Brook since the Wayside Inn grounds are open to the public, and that's a good way of following Hop Brook down and getting into and by next to Carding Mill Pond. In the 1950s, all of you remember Henry Ford, who owned the inn in the 30s, the 40s, and the great fire that we had in about 1955. At that time, Henry Ford came along and gave some money to rebuild the inn. That's the last money that we've seen from Henry Ford. He built the gristmill, he built the Martha Mary Chapel, And then he gave along the property to the National Trust, which in turn gave it to the present nonprofit trust that owns the inn and all the property. It's a 501c3 organization. We have unrelated business income that we pay tax on, and that's from the restaurant, the rooms, etc. There are 11 trustees. The inn since the mid-50s and early 60s has run along and been able to take care of all the property with the income from the restaurant and the rooms. It is a campus. We've kept the campus up until recently. There are 8 buildings there. There's the ice house that's down by the parking lot that's on the side of the inn. There's the inn itself. There's Little Red Schoolhouse up near the chapel. There's the chapel. There's the grist mill. There's a cider mill that probably nobody knows about that's over by the grist mill. There's the barn, and there's the innkeeper's house. There's also a huge root cellar that's somewhere between the it's this side, the inside of the grist mill. At 9/11, the whole hospitality industry took a tremendous hit, and the inn was no exception. Since then, we've had some major expenses. The one major expense has been the overflow at the grist mill. We spent $150,000 for that to repair that whole waterway. Because of the 9/11, because of the expenses, we've made clear to the trustees that they really needed to do a master plan. How to go out into the future, what are we going to be looking like 20 years from now, 25 years from now, and what do we need to do to get us there. The master plan was funded by the, to a large part by the Sudbury Foundation. Some of the goals were to bring the campus together, to attract younger people there. We decided that we necessary to do some fundraising, and obviously we needed more income to continue on with the campus. Some of the recommendations from the master plan, perhaps to build a wedding reception building, which could double as a education center or a conference center. Right now, 150 people can attend a wedding in the chapel, and really only 75 can go into our ballroom. We have 7 tent receptions set up for the summer, so we know the demand is there. So that's a possibility. We also want to calm the traffic going down Wayside Inn Road as you come, as you go west on Route 20, and then you take a right coming down Wayside Inn Road. Very few people slow down, and as you know, we have a parking lot that's on one side and the inn on the other, and a lot of people cross the road at dusk, and it's a very dangerous situation. We want to redo the period rooms. We want to upgrade the dining room, which if you've been out to the inn in the last month, you've seen that we've started doing that. There's a new rug there. There's curtains to be put up, and a new HVAC system and so on going in there. An early part of the master plan was to prepare a property survey and a property maintenance plan and a signage plan. And we are coming for you tonight to request $85,720 to do all 3 of those items. When we go to foundations in the future to raise money, and we have hired a part-time grant writer to do that, we'd like to be able to say that the town of Sudbury supports the inn. And that's when the CPA idea came to us, and we have applied to the CPA.
The campus that I call it is open to the citizens of public of Sudbury. If you go to the grist mill in the spring, the fall, in the summertime, you'll see a number of people there having picnics on the grounds, and it is open to everyone. I, as a resident for 38 years here in Sudbury, consider the Wayside Inn the gem of Sudbury. I hope you do too, and I ask you to support Article 37.
Thank you. Sheila Stewart for the Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee recommends approval.
John Grabinski for the Board of Selectmen.
Yes, Mr. Moderator. This is a tremendously valuable asset for the town of Sudbury. And as citizens, we all need to make sure that this asset is protected and doesn't go away. The Board of Selectmen unanimously support this article.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 37? Yes, over here. The gentleman.
Mr. Moderator, I have Timothy Coyne with the 24 Taylor Road. I urge passage of this article with the following reservations. The leadership of the Wayside Inn needs to recognize that the historical context of the inn is its principal marketing asset. Speaking as a loyal patron, who has also been on call to it over the years and occasional advice on matters involving its history and archival functions, I have seen a reduction of historical programming since the installation of the present management, whose strength is in the restaurant business, not in keeping archival preservation or matters that make this entry on the National Historic Register worthy of our sentimental as well as our culinary regard. Support of any of its non-wedding, non-party, non-feeding endeavors is tenuous, in my opinion, and at times conspicuously antagonistic to objective customers. That's bad box office. That has nothing to do with the size of the dinner portions, but everything to do with the life of the operation. Town funds may be granted to the inn to encourage its continuation, but they ought not to fund a profit-making business concern out of hand. That's not why CPA levied revenues are supposed to be appropriated, in my opinion. For example, if the trustees and management decide to forego the inn's 501c3 status, public money assigned to the inn ought to be repaid, and this article should reflect that condition, but it does not. So while I think the article may pass, I also think it is deficient. Should the town be discreetly left out of the decision-making process, it will inform against the new law's merit. The individual appointed to hold the title of innkeeper should ideally possess the historical depth as well as the business acumen to be the full leader of the inn. As of now, only the latter half of that mandate has been answered by the trustees. In my opinion, for the inn to remain a viable historical entity as well as a functioning business, an innkeeper should be appointed to oversee the historical, archival, and artistic elemental activities of the Wayside Inn, with the restaurant management subordinate to the innkeeper. One person should not wear both hats, because doing so has led to a decrease of attention to an area that is both academic and instructive in an entertaining way. With town treasure going into the coffers of this enterprise, so also should town influence and direction appear on the Board of Trustees, in my opinion. To try to persuade residents to vote in favor of CPA when it was first promoted, I described it as being the equivalent of seed capital for public works endeavors. With investment comes the right to inclusion in the decision-making process of the recipient's operation. I think it should be so here, in case the recipient attempts to forego its nonprofit tax-exempt character and become a for-profit enterprise. It's a legitimate hedge against the town's taxpayers becoming victimized by a recipient's possible unilateral strategic change of course of its business. The residents who abide by this levy should get what they intended to pay for. And what I'm essentially saying is that a town official should sit on the board of the Wayside Trustees and contribute to its decision-making and its direction. Thank you for your attention.
Yes, Mr. Pryor, you care to answer?
A couple of comments. First of all, part of the master plan was exactly as this gentleman spoke. Probably in the future, given more funds from fundraising, there will be a person of equivalent status to the innkeeper who will handle all of the historic part of it.
I agree. It's awful big job for an innkeeper to do, to take care of the inn, the hospitality, and also do the rest of it. Also, there are three members on our board of trustees that are historians. One is Leslie Morris, who is head of American History at Houghton Museum at Harvard. Bill Fowler, who just left the Mass Historical Society, as head of that, and Jonathan Fairbanks, who used to run the American History side of the Museum of Fine Arts.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard? Yes, sir.
Don Charles, 92 Blueberry Hill Lane. Just a question. You indicated that the Wayside Inn already has what you call the master plan, and now you're asking for funds for a comprehensive site study. Could you define the two, and how are they different?
Ms. Pratt?
Never had a property survey done by the inn, and that was a recommendation of the master plan. And the maintenance part of the plan and the signage part of the plan. And that was part of the master plan.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am, on the side.
Judy Deutsch, 41 Concord Road. I'm confused, and perhaps somebody here can clarify the issue. We've heard that generally, it's the Wayside Inn parcel is a 50, or the foundation or corporation, whatever it is a 501c3 corporation. But that does maintain a business, which does happen, I know, very frequently with 501c3, a business that hopefully is profit-making. Now, as I read the warrant article, we are going to be funding a site study of the Wayside Inn 125-acre parcel, which I believe includes the Wayside Inn. Am I correct about that? And the restaurant and the hotel. It doesn't seem quite right to me. It seems a little sticky that we're going to be spending money as a town for something very worthy, I know, but that also includes this profit-making part. Is anyone else bothered by that?
Okay. Mr. Pryor?
Ms. Deutsch, as I said right at the beginning, Hope Wayside Inn Corporation is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. The business inside the corporation is unrelated business as such, and that's the way it's recognized by the IRS. And we pay tax on that, on the business, the monies that we get in from the business. So that's the differentiation as best I can tell you. I'm not a lawyer in this area, so.
Yes, right here. Mr. Hill.
Doing this project,
name and address,
James Hill, 199 Concord Road. Reviewing this project and comparing the $85,000 investment to a historic preservation of 125 acres, I think is a tremendous opportunity for the town and a tremendous investment with great value back. And I think that should be a major consideration when looking at this project, is that it's 125 acres that's going to stay the way it has been for hundreds of years. For a large sum of money, but also a very good investment. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am, right here.
Susan Crane, 34 Robert Best Road. I
strongly support this. When I describe Sudbury to anyone who's come from out of town, I describe the Wayside Inn and make a point to take people there and to tour the site. Mr. Pryor has described there are 8 buildings on the site, 125 acres. There's the Carding Mill Pond, the Wayside Inn Pond, Hopbrook runs through it. I think it's a fabulous resource for the town, and that we need to support the Wayside Inn the way the Wayside Inn supports us.
Yes, Mr. Cole on the aisle.
Well, Mr. Moderator, I'd like to build on what several previous speakers have alluded to here. To some extent, it seems to me like we're putting the cart before the horse. We're being asked to do part of the Wayside Inn's planning process and pay for that for the benefit of a preservation easement or restriction that it's almost inconceivable that the Wayside Inn would seriously break. I mean, they're not going to go and make some really enormous change. It'd be like the federal government selling off Yosemite Park. They may talk about it, but they're not going to do it. It seems to me that it would make a lot more sense that the Wayside Inn would do the planning, pay for it, and then if there's something that they think would be of benefit to the town that they're willing to like to have us spend money on, then they should come here and say, we'd like to have you spend money on this particular thing with a particular benefit to the town. This reminds me an awful lot of a pig in the poke. It also sounds, you know, this is something that maybe the Sudbury Foundation might be interested in funding, a study of this sort, but I just don't think I see spending CPA funds to do it. I mean, it may be that I mean, everybody acknowledges that the Wayside Inn is a fine institution. That's a great thing to have in Sudbury, but it's not clear A, that the Wayside Inn is going to agree to the restrictions that the town wants to put on it, and B, it's not clear that those restrictions are worth $85,000 in the first place.
Thank you, Mr. Morley.
Well, I'm not sure where to begin, Mr. Coe. There's a lot of concerns. I will say the last thing you said is that the Wayside Inn won't agree to a restriction, but the way this is written, if they don't agree to a restriction, they don't get the money. So that should not be a concern. If we cannot come to an agreement on a restriction, they do not get the money. The idea here, I was going to get up anyway to correct something Mr. Hill said. We are probably not going to have a restriction that says it will stay the way it looks today for the rest of history. That would be worth a lot more than $85,000. The inn, given their mandate and their stewardship, is willing to enter into a restriction that I believe the town will be quite happy with. The idea here is not a pig in a poke, but it is that we they are in a situation where they are going to be changing, to some extent, how the Wayside Inn functions and how it looks. We would like to be involved in that process. It's not at all like the federal government and Yosemite Park. There are places in Sudbury like the Boy Scouts on Knobscot Mountain and the Wayside Inn that we all think are going to be here forever, and the truth is that neither of those are necessarily going to be here forever. It's the beginning of a process. It's a relatively small amount of money for the first step in a plan that, by the way, the Sudbury Foundation paid for the master plan, so they have already been tapped. We want to engage with Bill Place and Jody Kaplak and other people helping the inn as they help us as a town to preserve those 125 acres and historic buildings. Thanks.
Ms. Moderator, question has been called. Does that receive a second? It does. Anybody who wanted to respond give some information that's new, please raise your hand. I see one hand. That'll guide the hall in making this vote. All those in favor of the call to question signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes by well more than two-thirds. We're on the Article 37 motion, which requires a majority vote. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. We're now on Article 38, the Community Preservation Funds, Mahoney and Maloney, Feasibility Studies, Chris Morley for motion.
Mahoney.
to approve the recommendation of the Community Preservation Committee to appropriate $50,000 from Community Preservation Act funds for the purpose of conducting a feasibility study of the town-owned portions of the former Mahoney property on Old Framingham Road and the former Malone property on North Road. All appropriations will be equally allocated to the community housing and recreational categories and funded from FY07 revenue.
So we see the second. Yes, it does. Mr. Morley, do you need to say anything, or are we going to...
Nope, Selectman John Drabinski will be presenting.
Very good. All waiting for John. Finance Committee, Sheila Stewart. Yes?
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Thank you. Mr. Drabinski, you'll be speaking also for the Board of Selectmen.
Yes, Mr. Moderator.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, John Drabinski, Board of Selectmen. But before I start, I want to thank the town manager for saving my life this evening. I left my glasses on a job project, and just shows you the value of the town manager to the Board of Selectmen. So without this, I would not be able to speak. So thank you, Moderator.
Very stylish.
Thank you. Article 38 requests $50,000 from the Community Preservation Act Fund to fund two studies on town-owned parcels the town would like to redevelop. The studies will be conducted by an engineering firm that will go out to bid through open bidding laws, and feasibility studies will be conducted to include property surveys, wetland delineation, soil testing, to look at appropriate uses. The consultant will also review all existing data available on these properties, and one of the most important things is really to conduct public hearings to solicit public input onto what can happen on these properties. After these analyses, the consultant will create preliminary layouts and develop scenarios for both of these parcels. This is the Mahoney Farm that the town was just deeded to through some litigation just off Old Framingham Road. And you can see it's quite an open parcel. There are some wetlands on here. In the background, there's the CSX rail line. We have some visions, whether it happens or not, to turn that rail line into a rail trail. Right now it's been abandoned by CSX. If you go through Route 20, you'll notice all the rails and rail ties have been ripped up. And so there's a possibility there. This is the Mahoney parcel in North Sudbury. Oh, no, excuse me. There's 117 here. There's the former Unisys property, Frost Farm, White's Pond, the Water District Well Number 5, Mr. Burrow's Field. And this white parcel here is the Malone property. The Department of Public Works has been mining this property for the last 10 or so years. We probably have another, 2 or 3 years, maybe 5 years left to go on the property. When we're done with the property will be somewhat level, and it will be suitable for either playing fields, open space, or housing. The same with the Mahoney property, either open space, playing fields, or housing. But until we do that, we really need these feasibility studies and get the public input. So the board, we feel that a careful scientific evaluation of properties with appropriate public input, a lot of discussion on what's appropriate in these parcels is the appropriate way to go forward. The $50,000 would fund an independent consultant to work with town officials, citizens of the town, to come forward with what would be viable options on these parcels. And the options we're looking for, as I said, are basically open space, recreation, and housing. And that's why we're using the CPA funds for this. These are the three uses that the Board of Selectmen has said these parcels would be suited for, nothing else. So we urge your support. We think it's a tremendous opportunity to really create what the citizens of Sudbury want, and some valuable open space that we specifically in the Mahoney property won through a landmark litigation, and the Malone property that we've acquired a number of years back and have been generating some funds to town. So we urge your support. Thank you.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 38? I see none. All those in favor of Article 38? Excuse me. Great. Could the Boy Scouts, could you stand up, please?
Adam Miller, Knobscott Road. I'd like to, I know the selectmen in the current presentation, everything talked about the use of these properties as open space or as recreation or for housing. I'd like to see that the selectmen provide the consultant hired for this project with instruction to also evaluate particularly the Mahoney Farm, as I know it would be more suitable than the other property as for return to agricultural cultivation because of its historic use and it's also its location in an area which is being rapidly developed from a number of fronts there. And given that the town master plan and other sort of documents talk about the preservation of the working landscape in Sudbury and its agricultural history and whatnot, I think the preservation of this prime agricultural remnant in a part of town which is undergoing rapid change would be particularly valuable.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 38? Yes, in the aisle.
Nikki Fredrickson, Haynes Road, 170. I'm just surprised that you foreclosed any consideration of any kind of commercial use of the property up on 170.
The board has looked at various other municipal uses as the fire department, police headquarters, and other municipal uses. We don't deem these properties appropriate for those particular type of uses.
I didn't say municipal. I said commercial.
We don't see those as commercial entities because the town would have to rezone those properties. We don't see them as viable commercial areas. We also would not be able to use the Community Preservation Act funds to do an analysis of commercial property. We can only use CPA funds for the reasons that are appropriated for. And commercial activity would not be there.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 38? Yes, ma'am. Yes, can you speak up, please? It's not on. You have to turn it on. Go ahead.
No?
Yes, go ahead.
28 Maple Ave. This is just a question under the Community Preservation Committee report. What does the last sentence mean? All appropriations will be allocated equally to the community housing and recreation categories. Does that mean the appropriate this $50,000, or does that mean some subsequent appropriation?
Mr. Jabinski and Mr. Morley.
Vice Chair.
We have to designate what of the four areas of the CPA the money is being spent in. In this case, we're saying 50% of the funds will be allocated in one area and 50% in the other. So $25,000 will count towards recreation and $25,000 towards housing.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 38? I see none. All those in favor of Article 38 signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. We're now on Article 39. Chris Morley for a motion.
Move to approve the recommendation of the Community Preservation Committee to appropriate $100,000 from Community Preservation Act funds for the purpose of constructing walkways within the town, such design and construction to be guided by the spirit and intent of the Town of Sudbury 2001 Master Plan, the February 2000 report of the Walkway Committee, the July 2005 Sudbury Board of Selectmen directive regarding use of wooden guardrails, and by recommendations of the Town and Sudbury Planning Board and the Director of the Town and the Sudbury Department of Public Works. All appropriations will be allocated to the recreation category and funded from fiscal year 07 revenue.
Does that receive a second? It does. Yes, we'll have Jody Cadillac, Town Planner, for presentation.
I like this podium. Good evening, Jody Cadillac, Town Planner, speaking on behalf of the Town Manager on this article.
I'm back. I've been before you numerous times talking about walkways, and here I am again. It's a very critical need in Sudbury, and we're going to continue to push for the construction of walkways townwide. Walkway construction and connection of walkway links has been a public safety issue since the inception of the walkway program in the 1960s. To date, we have over 40 miles of walkways constructed along 160 miles of roads. The walkways were predominantly funded through articles such as this at town meeting. In recent years, we've also had the opportunity to collect additional funds from developers during development review, which has substantially increased our ability to construct walkways and has decreased the need for taxpayer funding of walkways. However, we aren't done. The Walkway Master Plan, completed in the year 2000, identified at least 16 additional miles of roads needing walkways. 50 roads from North Sudbury to South Sudbury need walkways. Dutton Road, Haynes Road, Marlborough Road, Towers Road, Deacon Road, Pantry Road, Union Avenue, and parts of Old Lancaster Road all need walkways. Thank you. The green lines on this slide indicate a portion of the roads in Sudbury without walkways. This map is 2 years old. We've created a few more links, and this only shows a portion of the walkways that we were talking about in 2004. There are still approximately 16 miles of walkways that, roadways that need walkways. We will continue to need additional walkways as the town continues to grow. This article requests the use of $100,000 of Community Preservation Act funds to construct these walkways. The $100,000 will enable the town Department of Public Works to construct approximately 1 to 2 miles of walkways over the next 2 years, similar to recent funding requests that we've received in the year 2000, 2001, and 2004. Can you go to the next slide? Over the past 6 years, walkways have been constructed on Peckham Road, Maynard Road, Horse Pond Road, Landham Road, Route 20, Raymond Road, Mossman Road, Concord Road, Haynes Road, and the most recent project on Willis Road. Those of you who live on or near these neighborhoods know firsthand how necessary these walkways are and how the ability to safely move about your neighborhood has increased since their construction. Our walkways provide us with the opportunity to recreate conveniently right out our front doors, not after driving across town to the soccer field or to the gym, but right in our own neighborhoods. Without a system of walkways, walking along many of Sudbury's roads would be too dangerous. We wouldn't feel safe allowing our children to bike to their friends' houses. Sudbury's roads are too narrow to be safe for pedestrians. This is the primary reason why we need walkways. Maintaining Sudbury's charming historical past is also very desirable. The narrow roads contribute to this charm. By maintaining a system of pedestrian walkways that are separated from the roadway pavement, we can preserve that small town look, but also increase our ability to move around town using non-motorized means. Perfect. Our recent experience working on the Willis Road walkway exemplifies the need and the ability to creatively design walkways to be both safe and attractive. On this project, stone walls were maintained and reconstructed in some locations along scenic Willis Road. The walkway was predominantly constructed behind the stone wall to create a safe buffer from the roadway. When initially conceived, walkways were thought of primarily in utilitarian means. They provided school children an opportunity to walk to school, thereby reducing the cost of busing. They would enable residents to walk from neighborhoods to town recreation and conservation areas. While this premise still holds true, the more recent use of walkways is purely for recreation. Every day, recreators of all sorts are out on the town walkways, walking, running, biking, rollerblading. The Sudbury Park and Recreation Commission supports this article. In recent years, they've begun to work to develop other types of recreational programs outside of typical team and field sports to broaden the spectrum of recreation available to town residents. Given the recent statistics on obesity and the need for Americans to exercise more frequently, the walkways provide that convenience which may motivate an otherwise sedentary person to exercise. Some town residents will never join an organized team sport. Some may not swim at the Atkinson pool or utilize the toddler playground. Walkways provide an equal opportunity for residents of all ages, abilities, and interests to exercise. Slide seven. Good. The location of where walkways will be constructed with these funds has not yet been determined. The funds will be used to further the recommendations of the 2000 report of the Walkway Committee. and walkways from the list in that report will be examined to determine where the greatest needs are. Advice from the safety officer will be solicited. Considerations such as easements and wetlands impact on whether a walkway can be built. Residents who wish their street to be considered should submit a request to the Department of Public Works and the Planning Board. A public forum to discuss and prioritize use of walkway funds will be scheduled sometime in 2006 so that we can update the list and listen to residents' issues. Slide 8. I want to note that none of this money will be spent on maintaining existing walkways. Walkway maintenance is a funded item in the DPW operating budget. Recent major maintenance projects to existing walkways include repaving the Morse Road walkway, Pratt's Mill Road, and portions of Peckham Road, Hudson Road, and Concord Road. All funds approved under this article will construct new walkway segments as allowed by the Community Preservation Act under the category of recreational areas. We urge you to consider the tremendous recreational and safety benefits that walkways add to Sudbury and to vote for this article. Thank you.
Thank you. Finance Committee, Sheila Stewart.
Finance Committee recommends approval.
Thank you. John Dubinsky, Board of Selectmen.
Yes, Mr. Moderator. The Board supports this article as it continues the construction of viable and safe walkways throughout the town. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone wish to be heard on Article 39? Yes, right here in front. Could you stand up, please?
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. I think it's a great idea, and I wholeheartedly support it. It seems like every year since I've been coming here, there's been at least one walkway article, so 13 years, minimum 13 articles, and I think it's good to see that we're making progress on this. I would like a little more information about the I know it's not part of this article, about the status of the maintenance of the existing walkways. I hear that it's funded, but I'd like to know whether there's a backlog and how we're doing with that. The other thing that I would like to ask is that a little more attention be paid to drainage issues when constructing walkways. I don't know whether this is a general problem or specific just to the walkway that was constructed on Horse Pond Road, but that's been there, I believe, about 3 years now. And since it was constructed, there's a backup of water whenever there's a spring, whenever there's a rain, whenever there's snow melting. And I think it could have been avoided had the original sort of drain location be maintained instead of being moved. So I think that that was just carelessness that should be avoided, because it's going to end up, not only is it a pain to deal with on a regular basis when the flooding occurs, but it's going to wear down that walkway and increase the maintenance cost ultimately, and safety issues as people walk across an eroded walkway. So thank you.
Thank you. I see the DPW director said he acknowledged everything that you said. And do you wish to say anything further in 1 minute or less?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Bill Place, Director of Public Works. We allocate approximately $20,000 out of our road work account for maintenance of the walkways in town. We are concentrating right on Concord Road. Concord Road is probably the oldest walkway we have in town. We're starting from Route 20 up to Wadsworth Cemetery. It was done almost 10 years ago. If you notice, we've done from Dr. Fitzgerald up to just beyond the empty circle. We're going to continue that through the center all the way to the high school. We've got a little piece up at the high school down to almost Newbridge Road. Hopefully we'll get that done this year. Horse Pond Road, unfortunately, the walkway was put in probably 1976. There is no drainage on Horse Pond Road, unfortunately. It's one of the older roads in town. We tried to address some of the drainage. There was some low areas in front of houses that we put some leaching pits in. There's high ground water table out in that whole area. It's very difficult to run drainage and discharge it to wetlands or detention basin. We are working on it. It's a long-term process, and we're hoping to support this article. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 39? Yes, Ben. Could you stand up, please? When I call you, it would be helpful if you stood so the Boy Scout can see you and bring you the mic. And he's going to hand you the mic with it on, so you don't have to touch any buttons.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
It's Judith Johnson, Willis Road. I have some great concerns about the public participation in this, and also about the spirit and intent to follow the February 2000 report of the Walkway Committee. In that particular report, it identified approximately 16 critical walkways. Some of these were identified for safety reasons, and some of them were in the business district. Approximately three of those priorities have been completed, which leaves approximately 13 left. You give me a little leeway here on these numbers I haven't looked at recently. Instead, we proceeded with a small strip on Willis Road that Ms. Koblak just presented to you. This particular strip was on a scenic road in the year 2002. The town identified a few roads that would be have protection of the stone walls and the trees under the Scenic Road Act. Basically, those are stone walls and trees in the public way. There was a public hearing that was held in July. It was announced about the most inconvenient time, about the 4th of July, and about 2 weeks later, in the middle of a prime vacation period, we had a very large turnout for that public hearing. The public in that hearing had a lot of concerns about the plan that was presented to them, and in fact it was overwhelmingly opposed to the plan that was presented. Even though we did ask for a count of the room, there was no count. The planning board proceeded with the construction of that walkway. I may also mention that the Historic Commission had some recommendations, and those were also ignored. And there were little plans. There were supposed to be drawings. There was little that was provided, and particularly in the first public hearing, it was continued to a second date in September, which was not announced and publicized. And so there was very little attendance, at which time there was some additional drawings that were presented. I think the concern here is the role of the public. If the public is opposed to it and wants some changes, what role do we have, and why are we being ignored, particularly when we're trying to retain our historic character? The Historic Commission is also trying to do that. Again, Willis Road was not indicated as a priority or a safety issue, and we have 13 priorities. Instead of just slapping it down where there is apparently some easements in a small section of the road at a high expense, why aren't we proceeding with the other priorities in the business district and completing some of the other projects and using our community preservation funds in a thoughtful and planned manner, at least in accordance with the Walkway Committee report that I think many hours and many people put a lot of work into.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 39? Yes, gentleman on the side.
Thank you. Again, John Donovan, Old Orchard Road. I'm in favor of walkways. They serve a purpose if they're used. But I'm sick and tired of driving down the road and finding two and three cyclists abreast with their turtle helmets on, blocking the road and saying, to hell with the rest of the people who are trying to get by. I'm also concerned about the joggers. It's nice to jog. We built the walkway to the tune of several hundred thousand dollars through town. But a lot of them don't use it. It's inconvenient. I have to go up and down little hills. Maybe I'll burn some energy. I wish there's more enforcement of this, and I also would like to see, maybe many people don't realize, in many, many towns and many cities, you can't ride a bicycle on the walkway / sidewalk. If that's allowed in this town, it's obvious from the town plan, I said so several times, please publicize it, that walkways are for use of bicycles and pedestrians. get them out of the road so they don't get hurt and the motorists don't get hurt.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 39? Yes, the gentleman holding the microphone.
Will Beckham, 324 Peckham Road. I ride my bike a lot, and a lot of walkways need to be resurfaced on Peckham Road. With all of these walkways being constructed, would consistency of walkway resurfacing halt or slow down?
I'm sorry?
With a lot of these I ride my bike a lot, and a lot of walkways need to be resurfaced on Peckham Road. With all of these walkways being constructed, would consistency of walkway resurfacing slow down? Or would...
So, DPW Director, the answer is no. Thank you. Anybody else care to be heard on Article 39? I see none. All those in favor of Article 39 signify by raising your cards. Those opposed... It passes overwhelmingly. We're now on Article 40. Chris Morley for the motion.
Move to approve the recommendation of the Community Preservation Committee to appropriate $74,281 from Community Preservation Act funds for the purpose of restoring the exterior of the Loring Parsonage Building, said work to be completed by the end of fiscal year 08. All appropriations will be allocated to the historic preservation category and funded from fiscal year 07 revenue.
Does that receive a second? It does. Jim Hill for presentation of the Sudbury Historical Commission.
Jim Hill, Sudbury Historic Commission. I'll be brief. Introduction to Loring Parsonage. This town-owned building was most recently used as offices for the town selectman and town manager. The house was built in 1723 and is known as the Loring Parsonage, having been the home of Reverend Israel Loring for many years. The Reverend Loring was hired by the town to be its pastor in 1705 until his death at 90 years old in 1772. During his 66 years, the Reverend Loring ministered at town meetings and to the citizens of Sudbury, having baptized 1,400 Sudbury children during his tenure. Restoration supports Sudbury's historic preservation goals, as noted in the Sudbury Community Preservation Committee report of October 2002. The Loring Parsonage exterior needs restoration of the clapboard and roof to a period style, replication of missing and damaged trim work, installing historically compatible gutters and bulkhead, and restoring the deteriorating windows and frames and a complete painting of the exterior. The process of placing the overhead wiring, computer network, and underground conduit to the town hall will also be completed. Currently, it's underground from the Flynn Building to the Loring Parsonage, and then above ground to the town hall. All the work that will be done in a historically accurate period with accurate colors and workmanship. See some of the pictures showing the damage that needs to be repaired. Pictures are a little dark in the light, but... we've gone out and gotten estimates on some of the restoration costs, a shingle roof, $17,250, skive clapboard siding, which would be historically accurate, $20,000, dental trim restoration, window restoration, painting, gutters, doors, electrical and network and phone, for a total amount of $74,281 under this particular act. The participants who've been involved in the project and in support of the Historical Commission, of course, the Historic Districts Commission, the Building Department, the Information Systems Department, Board of Selectmen, Community Preservation Committee, and the Sudbury Finance Committee. We would like your support in restoring this building and look forward to answering any questions.
Thank you. Sheila Stewart, Finance Committee.
Finance Committee recommends approval.
William Keller, Board of Selectmen.
Selectmen recommend approval to maintain our historic character in town.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 40? Can someone bring that gentleman a mic? Yeah, it's on.
Bruce Limier, 9 Bentbrook Road. Question, has it been looked into if we could obtain funding from the Mass Historic Commission to assist us in this endeavor?
Mr. Hill?
Yes, we have looked into getting funds from Mass Historical. They don't really give out that many grants, and as of this time, they have not agreed to give us any money towards this project.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 40? Yes, gentleman right here in the aisle. Can someone bring... Oh, thank you. Why don't you start speaking? We can tell if it's up.
I'm lost here. I just question the gentleman if any consideration being given to, in this day and age, for energy efficiency in our renovations for these places, like insulation, which is unheard of in those days, things like that, more efficient lighting is possible, and how about the home?
Thank you. Mr. Hill?
Yes, that is. Last night in the presentation by the CIPC, you saw that they had given consideration of budgeting money to repairs in the Loring Parsonage above and beyond what the restoration is. The CPC is strictly, money is strictly for restoration work, but the building has been used as offices, so actually it is insulated, and there is removable air conditioning units, and there is somewhat modern lighting. But one of the projects will be to continue upgrading the electricity and also in improving lighting and repairing the windows, etc., will definitely help in solving some of the issues as far as heating.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 40? I see none. All those in favor of Article 40 signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. We are now past the hour of 10:30. It seems in our best interest to stay just a little bit longer. I've elicited promises from the last four speakers that they will cut their speeches in half. So I urge you to vote in favor of staying instead of coming back tomorrow when we might have trouble getting a quorum. With that in mind, do I hear a motion to go beyond 10:30 till we finish the last four articles of the
moderator.
Is there a second? All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it receives more than the necessary two-thirds. We're now on Article 41. Chris Morley.
Move to approve the recommendation of the Community Preservation Committee to appropriate $24,022 from Community Preservation Act funds for the purpose of moving and restoring the Hearst House building, said work to be completed by the end of fiscal year 08. All appropriations will be allocated to the historic preservation category and funding from fiscal year 07 revenue.
Does that receive a second? It does. Jim Hill, Sudbury Historical Commission.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Sudbury Hearst restoration article is extremely interesting from a historical standpoint. That is a current picture of the building now. It is located on private property here in Sudbury, and the people who currently own it have offered to donate it back to the town. Now, the construction of this building was approved at Sudbury Town Meeting back in 1799. The building was first located next to the Revolutionary War Cemetery in Town Center, where it was used to store the town-owned hearse. Though moved a couple times over the years, it was a feature within the Town Center for over 100 years. The current private owners have offered to donate the structure to the town for historical preservation. The restoration itself will be to disassemble and inspect the building, restore the timber beams, reassemble the structure to reflect historically accurate materials and appearance. There will be a foundation excavating provided by Bill Place's office, and the restoration labor itself is also being donated to the town by R.B. Howarth and Sons and Ben Walker, timber framing specialists, both people that specialize in this particular work, and felt it important enough that they would donate their labor to restore the building as needed. What we're coming to the CPC and the town meeting for is the material costs alone, which would be hand-hewn timber, knife clapboard and sheathing, a stone foundation. Typically, this building would have had a dirt foundation. We're looking to do a cement foundation, most likely covered by wood, so it would be more historically accurate, but it would also preserve the building from rodents, etc. A wood shingle roof, doors and windows, replication ironwork. Some of the original ironwork on the building itself for the doors is from 1799. There is one or two pieces that need to be rebuilt, and we'll have them made exactly the same as the others. Then there's the dumpster cost, of course, but the restoration co-op cost is donated, the excavation cost is donated, the building itself is donated, so we're requesting a total of $24,022. The project participants and supporters from the beginning have been the Historical Commission, the District Commission, Sudbury Department of Public Works, Sudbury Board of Selectmen, the Sudbury Community Preservation Committee, and the Sudbury Finance Committee. Thank you. We hope that you'll look to preserve this very unique and very unusual building. We had a much longer speech prepared for it to give you some more history, but we'll be more brief tonight.
Thank you. Thank you. Sheila Stewart, Finance Committee.
Finance Committee recommends approval.
Bill Keller, Board of Selectmen.
Selectmen have heard the longer version of the speech and urge you to vote yes.
Thank you. Well appreciated. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 41? Yes. Mr. Coe. We have a new Boy Scout on the side here. Thank you, Mr. Gardner. Excuse me, Mr. Coe. Do we have any Boy Scouts on my left side still remaining? Just one? That'd be great. If you can take that whole side, and your comrade, Mr. Gardner, will take this side. Thank you for volunteering.
Yes, Mr. Moderator. The Boy Scouts, I guess, well, like some of the rest of us, have to get up early in the morning and would just as soon not have had to stay this late. If this building is so historically significant and so unique and so on, how come none of us have ever heard of it before? The same $24,000 could buy a new police cruiser, I'll bet. Maybe not the same $24,000 because this is CPA funds, but you know, $24,000 is $24,000, and I question the necessity for spending this money on a building. I mean, how many times has it already been rebuilt? How much of it is really historical? This to me sounds like a boondoggle. Sorry,
Mr. Hill, please.
We had the building reviewed by the timber specialist, and they state that the timber framing within the building is original from that period, so we believe it to be complete. We had preservation people look at the ironwork on the building as far as for the hinges for the doors, which were all handmade. They believe those to also be from the period. The main reason you probably haven't heard of this building is it's been for about 100 years been behind somebody's house and has been used as a playhouse, as a storeroom, as a gardening shed over a period of time. People have recently purchased the house here in Sudbury. I met with them at a Historic Districts Commission meeting. I told them a little bit of the history of the building. If you were to go to the old home survey books, which there are copies at the town hall, you'll note that it is listed as one of the old historically significant old buildings in town, and has been listed that way since I believe the 60s or 70s.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am. Could you stand up, please?
Just a quick question. Where are you going?
Jim Hill.
The building is going back to where it originally, pretty much originally where it stood, which is next to the Revolutionary War Cemetery, right in the corner near the pound.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 41? I see none. All those in favor of Article 41, raise your cards. Those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. We're now on Article 42. Chris Morley for a motion.
Move to approve the recommendation of the Community Preservation Committee to appropriate $136,305 for the purpose of restoring historical ironwork in the Revolutionary and Wadsworth cemeteries and at the tombs alongside Concord Road. Said work to be completed by the end of fiscal year 2008. All appropriations will be allocated to the historic preservation category and funded from FY07 revenue in the amount of $58,837 and from historic restricted reserves in the amount of $77,468.
Can I receive a second? It does. Jim Hill for a presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Most people are familiar with the ironwork, which is along Concord Road, right near the Revolutionary War Cemetery. There's fencing, there is the tombs there, and this ironwork at these locations is threatened by further disintegration if preventive steps are not taken. This restoration will coincide with the rehabilitation efforts in Sudbury Center and ongoing at the Revolutionary War Cemetery. The Wadsworth restoration is of important antique restoration of important antique ironwork with historical significance. The restoration work itself is to survey and document the existing components, sandblast all still existing components, and dispose of the lead containing contaminants. There will be replacement components cast as original, and repair the straps and hinges on all tomb doors, and restore and reset the iron gates and fences. These are some examples. That's at Wadsworth itself. That particular fence itself also needs to be restored. Most of the iron fences throughout New England have that were in cemeteries were taken during the war and melted down for metal. So the few that are still left are particularly historically significant. If one has been to the Wadsworth Cemetery, and I went to the Parmenter plot, they would see that this white fence here on the right is absolutely incredible workmanship. And it's actually, it looks like tree branches. And there are pieces that have broken over time, just, you know, from being there for over 100 years. The tombs that are currently there, they have metal straps that hold the doors on that are pretty much ready to just fall off at this point. We feel that this is an important part of Sudbury again, also not just for the people that are going to go to the cemetery, but for the people that actually founded the town of Sudbury and are buried in some of these locations. The restoration costs to make new gates similar to the originals, or exactly as the originals, $13,000. The tomb fences along Concord Road, the Parmenter plot, the Wadsworth Monument itself, the tomb doors, and for that amount, the total requested is $136,305. This project will take a couple years to complete. It's been vetted in his supporters are the Historical Commission, the Historic Districts Commission, Department of Public Works, Board of Selectmen, the Community Preservation Committee, and the Finance Committee have all come out in support of it. We hope that the town will come out in support of it as well, so that we can restore the area along the tombs in Sudbury Center itself, and then at the same time, it makes the most sense to also restore the work at the ironwork at Wadsworth. Thank you.
Sheila Stewart, Finance Committee.
Finance Committee recommends approval.
Bill Keller, Board of Selectmen.
The Selectmen likewise recommend approval.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 42? I see no one. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed. Thank you. It passes overwhelmingly. We're now on Article 43. Chris Morley for a motion.
Move to approve the recommendation of the Community Preservation Committee to appropriate $360,000 for the purpose of purchasing by the Sudbury Housing Authority housing units within the town for use as affordable rental residences, expending no more than $90,000 on any one unit. Said purchase to be completed by the end of fiscal year 09. All appropriations will be allocated to the community housing category and funded from FY07 revenue in the amount of $40,000 and a transfer of $320,000 from 2003 annual town meeting Article 32C, Sudbury Housing Authority proposal, as amended by 2005 annual town meeting Article 41.
Can I receive a second? It does.
I do have to make a quick point, Mr. Moderator. But
yes.
Very, very fast.
Go right ahead.
As I noted in my opening remarks, for some CPA communities, community housing is their major expenditure. In Sudbury, if this article passes, and after 4 years of appropriation, we will have devoted roughly 10% of revenues to community housing. However, we will not have yet actually spent a dime. Town meeting has previously approved $500,000 in CPA funds to buy down a few additional affordable units in 40B developments. We have not succeeded so far in doing this. As we can see at the end of this motion, the $320,000 previously approved by town meeting for the Sudbury Housing Authority, which has gone unspent for lack of land, will be rolled over into this project.
Thank you. Beth Rust, Sudbury Housing Authority.
Thank you. So I have a really brief presentation. Chapter 40B is a state statute which requires local zoning boards to approve affordable housing developments if between 20 and 25% of the units have long-term affordability restrictions. Chapter 40B applies to communities with less than 10% of their housing inventory deemed as affordable. As of last January, 47 communities have exceeded the 10%, with another 36 almost there. This is 24% of all of Massachusetts and includes neighboring towns such as Lexington, Burlington, Marlborough, Framingham, Hudson, and Lincoln. Sudbury has 3.8%, which is 360 short of the 10%. Chapter 40B is active all over Massachusetts, including Sudbury. There are a number of 40B developments already built and occupied in Sudbury and others in process. The Zoning Board authorizes these through granting the comprehensive permit. The affordable component, which is 25% of the development, is sold through a lottery where most of the units can be purchased by those with Sudbury connections. This local preference policy serves those with a vested interest in our community by providing them a diverse housing option. Until Sudbury reaches the 10% standard, 40B developments may override local zoning rules. The Sudbury Housing Authority proposes to purchase four 40B units over 3 years with the objective of modestly increasing affordable rental units. The proposal asks for the CPA funds for the down payment from the community housing allocation, and the Housing Authority will obtain financing for the balance of the purchase price. The units will be rented, and the Housing Authority would receive a government subsidy for that rent. As Chris mentioned, the Housing Authority has recently returned $320,000 of CPA funds. These were appropriated a few years ago to build new community housing, but the project was unsuccessful in being able to obtain land on which to build. In some ways, you could consider this proposal new for those same funds. There are four benefits to having the Housing Authority purchase these units. The Housing Authority ensures that the affordable unit is always used by those needing it. This is done by annual income certification. Secondly, the proposal increases needed rental housing. As identified in both the master plan and the community housing plan, there's a shortage of affordable rental housing for families in Sudbury. This serves a needier population where tenants only pay 30% of their income. This is often families with a single working parent, families starting out, or those with disabilities. Often after living in the Housing Authority properties, tenants move on to home ownership. Additionally, this plan is consistent with the local preference policy of the home ownership units. The Housing Authority gives preference to residents with Sudbury connections, and in the Sudbury Housing Authority family houses now, 75% are rented by people who came with a Sudbury connection. And lastly, the Housing Authority is part of a large state organization, the Department of Housing and Community Development, and has successfully managed tenant-occupied properties in Sudbury for many years, a proven organization in town. In summary, this proposal increases needed housing options for those with Sudbury connections and offers a simple way to provide a few additional rental units. Thank you, and I ask for your support.
Thank you. Sheila Stewart, Finance Committee.
Finance Committee recommends approval.
Board of Selectmen, Larry O'Brien. Oh, Bill Keller.
I'll speak on that. The Board of Selectmen recommend approval. This is a modest proposal. You can see by the numbers, $360,000, 90 each, so that's 4 units of rental housing. We do consider it a part of our community civic responsibility to contribute to housing for people who have the need, and we'd like your support.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 43? I see no one. All those in favor of Article 43 signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. Right before we begin Article 44, I just wish to announce that I have reappointed Bill Nealon, Jr., an existing member, a longstanding member of the Finance Committee, Ralph Verney, a new member, and Debbie Zirka, a new member of the Finance Committee. And I thank the entire Finance Committee, particularly the co-chairs, Bob Jacobson and Marty Raganese, all of whom have put in long hours and excellent work during these difficult financial times. I'd also like to thank Maureen Valente, Mary McCormick, Rosemary Harvell, Elaine Jones, Judy Newton, Mark Thompson, and our checkers at the entrance, the Boy Scout runners, including Jim Gardner, snack servers, LSAV staff, and Town Council Paul Kenny. Most of all, I'd like to thank all of you for staying this late at night to exercise your right to legislate. Also, Town Clerk asked me to remind you, if there are any town officials who have yet to be sworn in, you must do so at the end of town meeting tonight. And speaking of the town clerk, this is Barbara Sarah's last Sudbury town meeting, as she is retiring on June 30. On a personal note, I will miss you, particularly all your assistance and your good humor, which has helped me a great deal at town meeting. Thank you, Barbara. Our finance director, Sue Peterson, is getting married and moving away, so this is her last town meeting also. Thank you, Sue. I recognize Mark Cablack for a motion on the Article 44.
Move to approve the recommendation of the Community Preservation Committee to appropriate $960,000 for the purpose of constructing a community athletic field complex on the property of the Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School. Said work to be completed by the end of fiscal year 08. Said appropriation shall be subject to the town entering into a mutually satisfactory intermunicipal agreement with the Lincoln Sudbury Regional School District, and subject further to the town's determination that sufficient funds are available for completion of the athletic complex. All appropriations will be allocated to the recreation category and funded from fiscal year 06 general unrestricted reserves.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Cadillac?
Thank you. The Community Preservation Committee first received the inquiry as to whether this project would be one that we would recommend from the Park and Recreation Commission. This is a town-sponsored project that the Community Preservation Committee reviewed in accordance with our recreation criteria. This
proposal is for expenditure of $960,000, which is about two-thirds of the entire project amount. And that is important, and one of the reasons why the motion that I've read tonight is slightly different than the motion as it appears in the warrant. The motion as read tonight reflects the two contingencies. One is that we need to determine whether or not there are sufficient funds available for the remaining one-third of the project costs. And secondly, the motion reflects the fact that significant work has been done and the main terms and conditions of the intermunicipal agreement have been agreed upon in principle, but the final document has not yet been inked. And so the motion as read tonight includes those two contingencies, which still need to be met in order for the appropriated funds to be expended. But it brings me to the matter at hand, which is that this is a town-sponsored project that was brought to us, reviewed in accordance with our criteria, one that was considered and unanimously adopted by the Community Preservation Committee, because when you look at the criteria as they appear on the screen, it met almost all of them. It supports multiple recreation users. It serves a significant number of residents. It expands the range of recreational opportunities available to residents of all ages. It jointly benefits park and recreation initiatives as well as potential conservation commission initiatives. And it maximizes the utility of land already owned by Sudbury, in other words, or in this case, the Lincoln Sudbury School District. These are important criteria, and I want to point out two in particular. Recreational outreach. This athletic field complex, as will be described to you by the other presenters tonight, will reach multiple user groups, and the track facility that's proposed will be available for non-traditional, non-team sports-related activities. Secondly, the Community Preservation Committee always looks to leverage funds, and I mentioned that this proposal provides for roughly two-thirds of the CPC funds for the project. The other one-third funding will come from private user groups and from the Lincoln Sudbury Regional School District. Secondly, this proposal also allows us to leverage basically the existing facilities of Lincoln Sudbury's Regional School District. We don't have to acquire the land where this facility will be built. This is coming on the heels of the cutting athletic field, which is coming online this spring, and I believe the grand opening will be held in a matter of weeks. A major component of that cost was simply to acquire the land for that field. In this case, all of the funds that are going to be expended on the project will be for the development of the athletic field. So with that introduction, I'd like to segue into a presentation by Bill Keller, who will speak tonight on behalf of Park and Rec and the Board of Selectmen, and then we will also have a brief presentation by Mark Collins on behalf of the school district.
Thank you, Mark, Mr. Moderator, members of the hall. I'm pitch hitter tonight, because it's a recreation project and we should have some sports talk, but I'm pitch hitting. Paul Griffin is the chairman of the Park and Rec Commission, and he's done most of the work on this project over the, not individually, but he's done a lot of the work and was the driving force in this, and he's taken ill, and I learned this afternoon that I would be speaking. So I'm making his presentation, and this is a diagram of the site of the existing football field at LS, and as you can see, it looks like a football field, and it has a track around it. Now, the surface of the field will, under this proposal, become artificial turf, and the track will be replaced, and there will be new bleachers installed as well. The bleachers, the money for the bleachers is already existing funds, so that's not part of the proposal tonight. That money was already there. The intent of this project is to use existing funds, new contributions from user groups that I'm going to discuss, and the $960,000 of CPA funds. In 2002, Park and Recreation commissioned a study to identify our recreation facilities and our recreation and field needs. It determined that, and it was no surprise to those of us who use those fields, that we were short. We needed, at that point, at least an additional three rectangular fields. Rectangular field is the type that's used for football, for soccer, for lacrosse, for field hockey. And since that study was done, we've built one of them. That's the cutting field.
Excuse me, Mr. Keller? I'm sorry for interrupting. Do you know how much longer you have? The reason I'm asking is because I've just been informed by a member of the LS staff that in 20 minutes the lights go out automatically. So I would give my very short version of that speech.
Okay. The very short version is that we have an opportunity here to have a field that can be used throughout the year. Presently, the football field is only used for football games, home games. The sod field takes a beating. It needs to be seeded regularly. It needs to be watered regularly. None of that has to be done on an athletic turf field. If you could just scroll through slowly through the screens there, I won't speak to them, but there's information that you'll see. This is was a town-initiated project. It's not, and I'm going to say it bluntly, it's not the LS coming through the back door trying to get more money. I know there's been talk about that. It is not the case. This is initiated by the Park and Rec Commission. Synthetic turf has clear benefits, low maintenance, no seeding, no sodding, environmentally friendly, no pesticides, no fertilizer, considerably less watering, almost no watering, but they do use a little water to keep it from getting too hot. No need for the field to be rested so it can be used year-round. This is a way for us to get additional field space without having to buy the land. It's a considerable savings, $960,000. I don't have it in my back pocket. It is a lot of money, but it's not. It is considerably less than it would cost to start from scratch. This is an opportunity for what is classically called a win-win situation. The town will benefit. The school will benefit. Whenever the field is not being used by the school, it will be used by town groups, organized sports, citizens. Anyone who wants to go out there and play can go out there and play. Thank you.
Mark Collins for a 15-second presentation.
Lincoln Sudbury supports this article. It allows us to maximize use of current facilities, particularly what we've seen is an explosion of girls' sports, both at the high school level and in town. This allows us to meet the needs created by that demand, so we support it.
Thank you. The Finance Committee and the Selectmen have both informed me that they're in support of the article. Does anyone wish to be heard on Article 44? Yes, sir, on the aisle.
Again, John Donovan, Old Orchard Road. My concern is some of the things I've read over the past year or so on artificial turf and athletes' injuries. It doesn't give. You can't twist on it. You fall on it, you hurt. It doesn't give way at all. I'm thinking more or less the liability of the town knew or should have known that this was possible. I'd like to see more study done on this.
Thank you. Mark Collins will answer.
The fact of the matter is that the new generation of synthetic turf is significantly safer than actual grass surfaces. We found that out through studies across the country. And each of the fields that we put in place have proven that hypothesis.
Yes, Boy Scout down in front, please.
Jim Gibbs, 35 Rolling Lane. I worry when somebody says win-win. The last person to do that was Mr. Tyler a year ago.
You know how I think.
So I don't think that's a fair characterization.
Thank you.
You might not want to use that. I have a question, a general question about the CPA, and I have a comment, but I'll do both and then sit down and listen to the answer to the question. Is there a designated percentage that we must spend on any one category? So does recreation, I think the number for recreation was something like 16% or something like that. Where do those percentages come from?
Why don't we stop there? Mark Cadillac for an answer. Hang on to the mic.
There's no state mandated minimum percentage required for recreation projects. Of the four categories that we can fund, three of them have a minimum 10%. That's open space, housing, and historic preservation. Recreation does not have a minimum. In Sudbury's case, if we approve all of the projects on the slate today and look back toward the previous 3 years, approximately 16% of the total amount of funds collected through fiscal year 07 will be spent on recreation.
Thank you. And your comment?
Okay. Although I think this is a fine project, I worry about spending that much on recreation out of CPA funds. One of the primary drivers behind passing CPA in the first place was for the acquisition of open space. We haven't heard a thing about this year in terms of trying to stem the tide of development in this town. And I'm worried about spending $1 million on recreation in that we might end up losing opportunities down the road to acquire open space when it becomes available. And that primary consideration for CPA. So for that reason and that reason alone, I am against this article.
Okay. The question has been moved. Has it been seconded? Well, just register your vote. All those in favor of the call of the question signify by raising your cards. Those opposed? Let me try it once more. All those in favor of the call of the question signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, keep your cards up, please. No, it's too close. It's too close to call. We'll hear a few more presentations. Mr. Collins, were you about to say something? Or Mr. Morley?
I'm sorry, I'm afraid we're going to get the lights turned out on us, but apparently Mr. Gish was out when I read this, or else I didn't read it very well. I apologize. The sub-CPC has been following policy of roughly spending over time about 10% in the areas of community housing, historic preservation, and recreation. The goal of this policy is to preserve revenue for future open space projects. In the absence of an especially compelling project, this rough budgeting has and will be a factor in whether the CPC forwards a project for town meeting approval. Until tonight, the recreation spending was 4%. It will jump to 16%. Next year, when we get money, it will go back to around 10%. We are saving money, almost $5 million, for future open space projects.
Thank you.
I apologize if I didn't do that enough earlier.
Yes, there's a gentleman right here. Stand up, please.
Don Charles, Blueberry Hill Lane. I would like to second the point made by the speaker in the front. This article just doesn't feel right. It's too much money for a reason that was not the main reason for community preservation, which is to buy land. If this were for $100,000 or $200,000, I think it would make sense. But for almost $1 million, it's just too much to spend for this particular purpose. That money should be left for purchase of land.
Yes, Mr. Clark.
Right, could I respond to that point? And what I think is important here is that if we can cover this field with the synthetic turf and use it year round, we will not need to buy more recreational land. So we will not have to spend money for recreational land. We will be able to preserve more open space than we would have otherwise.
Yes, by the aisle. Please stand up.
Okay. My name is Sean Cutting, 381 Minute Road, sometimes known as Cutting Field. I think that one thing that people, when Cutting Field was purchased, it was probably regarded as a recreational purpose, but it was really an open space acquisition in that, in addition to buying the land for the field, the development rights were purchased on a large amount of property, and that basically what happened was 20 houses were not built, or are not going to be built, because of the fact that the development rights were purchased. So I think that while cutting field for a $4 million purchase might be regarded as a recreational purpose, it was really, for the most part, an open space purchase. Now, I'd like, also like to speak shamelessly as a parent of a runner, track coaching star for Lincoln Sudbury, and that this track is so bad that this year we are not going to have any home meets. It's about the last athletic facility down there which has not been improved. Every other field, every other sport has been improved. For 2 years now, cross-country runners had, well, first a year ago, they had no home meets because of all the construction. This year was going to be the first time that we were going to have some home meets for the track team, which, by the way, is an exceptional team and has done very well in one the DCL and the indoor tracks this year. And that it's a facility that doesn't stand up to the standards that we've created in this town. We have probably the most highest priced high school in the universe here, and we've got everybody else has sports things and idea, but this standard for track competition is so low that we have been taking away our home meets. I mean, it's dangerous to run out there is about what it comes down to. And I think that we should stand up and pass this on.
Thank you. The question's been called. Is it seconded? It is. All those in favor of the call of the question signify... all those opposed. Different story this time. Passed overwhelmingly. This requires a majority vote. All those in favor of Article 44 signify by raising your cards. All those opposed. It passes overwhelmingly. We got one more article, please. Article 45, Chris Morley.
Please don't leave the building. We need to pass this. Okay, this is move to appropriate. The sums as recommended by the Community Preservation Committee in the following Community Preservation budget for FY07, said sums to be raised by FY07 Community Preservation surtaxes. $75,000 in administrative and operating costs, $811,798 in debt service, and further reserve the following funds, $135,000 for community housing, $513,342 for budget unrestricted CPC uses.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Morley?
This motion is what the town accountant requires to properly adjust her books for the fiscal year and to comply with the state's CPA statute. It is discussed in detail in your warrant. I would point out, as we state in the warrant, that this article is where we account for the 10% reserves in the three categories if they have not been expended. As all of tonight's articles have passed, the only category with leftover reserves this year is community housing. Thank you very much.
The Finance Committee and the Board of Selectmen informed me that they support this article. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 45? Yes, sir. Well, Alan, there's a mic right next to you.
My name is Alan Wallach, and I live at 75 Thompson Drive. Just a quickie on this thing. Reading the here, it says the 70. I'm not in front of anything else but the $75,000 for administrative and operating costs. And my concern is there a plan for that $75,000? Operating costs. If you're hiring people, they go on, and you don't fire people right away. And therefore, we're defacting approval of $75,000 for as many years as we're hiring the people. I'm assuming, and the question to the Finance Committee, have you seen a plan for that $75,000? All the other details I've seen is excruciating detail on how the money is being spent. I don't see it here. The only comment they made is how the funds could be spent in that article, not how it will be spent, and it can go beyond a certain period of time. So I'm questioning to the Finance Committee, is there a detailed plan on how $75,000 is going to be spent? And if there's not, and it's not allocated towards projects and peoples, I would recommend you change that number to something that is recommended.
Thank you. Sheila Stewart, Finance Committee?
I think Chris Morley has the answer to that.
Okay.
We're allowed to probably spend $125,000 by statute. We don't need that much money. What we've used it for in the past is for mostly investigative consulting services, such as protests and appraisals and things like that. People are giving me words here. I'm sorry, I'm rushing really fast. We did add, as was mentioned earlier by Selectman O'Brien, we are this year paying for a housing specialist and a small amount for the CPA portion of the town budgeted planner. So that's $6,000 for the planner and $36,000 for the housing specialist. But we are not hiring people that we are agreeing in advance to employ for years to come. This amount has to be voted every year, and what doesn't get spent, which is what has happened so far, gets put back into the CPA.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 45? Yes, in the aisle.
Jim McGrelly, Penny Meadow Road. The article implies the need for the $75,000 is to allow the town to conduct business on a time-sensitive basis. My question is, has the town lost CPA projects in the past due to its inability to conduct business in a timely manner? And also, I'm not sure if you did answer this, but how does the town currently handle administrative and operational expenses for CPA projects? I'm hopeful that the town could be more creative in using available resources for these expenses and use the $75,000 for other tangible and higher priority CPA projects. Thank you.
Mark Kablak to answer that question.
First of all, just so that we don't have a point of confusion on this article, this is simply a budgetary proposal. The $75,000 needs to be allocated to this fund in order for it to be spent. It doesn't mean that we have a plan to spend it. Okay, so this is just an exercise mainly in accounting. Secondly, these funds have been used in the past, and the example that I would come up with most readily is when we acquired the Libby land, which was last year. We needed to conduct appraisals and perk tests, as Chris mentioned, that needed to be done within the timing that was dictated to us by Mr. Libby. We needed to tap into those funds to do those two studies within a matter of weeks, and we were able to do that. So these funds do allow us to be readily prepared to be able to react to things on short notice. They also allow the committee to conduct longer-term studies and inquiries on things that we think would be beneficial to the town within the confines of the CPA.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 45? I see none. All those in favor of Article 45, raise your cards. All those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. Do I have a motion to dissolve the annual town?
No move.
Is there a second? All in favor? Any opposed? Please exit as soon as you can. The lights in the building will be turned off at 11:25, except for this auditorium.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you all very much.
That'd be a good school.
Yep, we need a vice chair.
Oh, yeah.